Mike.
I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee. And we have the minutes in the packets. Representative Paymar, you look like you've been studious there. Would you like to move approval of the minutes?
I would move the minute, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion is before us. All those, any discussion? All those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. I'd like to bring the budget resolution back before the committee. And we have the A6 amendment to the budget resolution in the packets. Essentially, the budget resolution makes five changes. It changes the total net spending to conform to the changes that will be taking place in other parts of the resolution. It increases the budget reserve by $150 million to conform with Chapter 150. That was tax bill number one. We increased the Health and Human Services target by $16.042 million. We'll be covering that when Representative Huntley presents his bill, but essentially for the interest of committee members and people in the audience, that is for the 5% group that moves it from, depending on how you calculate it, but to a solid 5%. It decreases the jobs target by $1.594 million. And that is mainly to reflect the changes. If you remember the last time we met, I announced that the Women's Economic Opportunity Initiatives would be being carried as a separate bill. So that is the reason for that move, and we had announced it earlier. And then we decreased transportation to reflect the actual cost of their bill by $300,000. They had $300,000 that went unspent. So that's the budget resolution changes in a nutshell. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate seeing the extra percent on there. And I know you know all the bills better than anybody would expect. And so on the Human Services bill, I'm curious about, I know Epson Huntley thinks about it, but I'm curious your view and leadership's view. There are three items that are excluded from the House bill, Human Services bill, that are of significant size. There's $11 million in two pots for salary supplements for mostly AFSCME workers, and then $3 million for the expert panel for the MSOP study. And I just so members know, and this is the leadership group on the finance side, that if those don't go forward, there'll be some 200 layoffs at Moose Lake and St. Peter, right in the middle of a major lawsuit on the part and on the discussion about quality of training. Those three items equal $14 million, which is curiously close to the $16 million. And so as this bill goes forward, do you expect to go home without those salary supplements and that $3 million of expert witnesses, expert review costs?
Well, we're never done until we're done, but this morning's change in the budget resolution was to reflect the 1%. Quite frankly, I'd have to have further dialogue with Representative Huntley and others about any changes in the future.
Yeah.
But you've put it on the table.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I didn't bring an amendment prepared, but I'm. This is a really important component to have in the bill. And so even though it appears the House is going to go ahead with a 5%, what this really does, it establishes that they can go ahead for sure with a 4%.
Right.
So I can't imagine at the end of the day that we're going to lay off 200 technicians and clinical workers at Moose Lake and at St. Peter while we're in the throes of a federal lawsuit with a judge. So it's a good start, and I appreciate that. And
this is Representative Abel, the first I've become aware of it. So when I say that I need to talk with perhaps Representative Huntley and others,
All right. Well, I'm glad to bring it to your attention, Mr. Chair, and I just thought you knew about that, so no, I didn't mean to presume that you didn't. I just gave you the credit. Thank you for
if
your...
If I knew about it, I've had a lot of a lot of balls up in the air right now, so if I did hear about it, it wasn't on my radar screen this morning at any rate.
And sometimes those balls hit you on the head, don't they?
But the 1% was clearly on my radar screen, so that's what we're resolving with.
Thank you very much.
In the budget resolution. So, as I say, I move the A6 amendment. Any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing that I think would be helpful for us as a committee is we're doing a lot of spending here, and I want to know what are the tails for this, and what is one-time spending versus what is going to be ongoing spending. And I know that I think that would be helpful for us to know what are we committing ourselves to as a state and whether that's sustainable. And then also, you know, one of the questions that I ask from everybody is how many full-time equivalents are we actually adding to state government? So are we at some point going to have that before this comes to the floor, a documentation that shows that?
Mr. Marks, on the details question, do you have anything? I know we're watching the tails closely, and that's the instructions we give to the chairs to share with their committees. As far as the changes today, I know that $16 million for the 1%, of course, would have a tail.
Mr. Chair, yes, it does. I have tracking on all of that. I don't have any of the changes from today entered into it yet. I don't have those numbers with me right now as far as the tails go, but I'll make it available. We'll have something on the website as well very soon. And each of the spreadsheets is showing what the fiscal year 16 and 17 cost implications are. I do have something that shows one time and ongoing. It's showing what in fiscal 15 what's one time and what's ongoing. The numbers are misleading in the sense that you could have something that's one time. Or I'm sorry, you could have something that's ongoing, but it might have a cost of $1 million in 15, and it might be $1 million in 16 and $1 million in 17. Or like some of these human service ones, $1 million in 15 might be $1.5 million in 16 and $2 million in 17. So it, you can't draw conclusions from what's one time and what's going on ongoing, just what the numbers are in 16 and 17, but you do know whether the program is or not. And again, the spreadsheets are also showing on there, if you see any number in the 16 and 17 column for specific programs, that's showing that there is an ongoing cost implication of those programs.
Representative Anderson.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Marks, so do you have the FTEs as part of that as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I haven't been collecting the FTE numbers. I believe the individual committees or fiscal staff are. I haven't attempted to compile them yet.
Representative Anderson.
And Mr. Chair, it would be helpful if we did have that data as well.
Yeah, I know you've asked, at least last year, the various fiscal committees as they came forward with us that question, and so perhaps their staff can provide you with that, or the committee with that. Probably everybody's interested in that question. Okay, any further discussion, Mr. Representative Dean?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was just wondering, with the adjustment to the resolution, I noticed that the capital investment bill that was put forward by the chair was over target, and I don't see any resolution with that for extra dollars for within that target. Is there an anticipation that that number will change, or is that will that stay where it is currently?
It doesn't change with the budget resolution this morning. That was, well, if Representative Houseman is here, I know she has been working on the bill, and she's aware of what the target is, and that's where it stands right now, and I haven't asked where the Senate is on that question, and I don't know yet where the Senate is on their target for bonding yet either.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Houseman, did you want to add to that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I can tell you that my staff and I have been working all weekend, and all we do is cut and add. That's the direction we get, which is rather interesting, and it's going to be not.
I think Representative Dean was probably referring to the original bill that you introduced, and I was one of the co-sponsors of, which was the result of the work that the committee did with, while you were on all or most of those 20 days of traveling the state and looking at what the state's needs were. And I think what Representative Houseman, we had 20 or 2.7 billion roughly in requests initially, and so that original bill reflected some of what we experienced on those tours. Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor of the adoption of the CSRES-06AG amendment to the budget resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carried. Oh, did I say AG? A6 for clarification. Okay. Just read that. Okay. Oh, okay. By the way, we need to have Mr. Marks change the internal target for ag as it reflects on the spreadsheet. Maybe you should mention to people what that was about.
Mr. Chair, members, that agriculture subtotal line, which is reflecting the agriculture spending, that's part of the environment and ag number, should be 1,910,000 instead of excuse me, instead of 1,500,000.
Okay, everybody, learn that. That's just an administrative function that Mr. Marks will take care of. Then, okay, I'd like to bring House File 3172. The Omnibus Supplemental Appropriations Bill back before us, and as we mentioned last week, we would continue to build that supplemental bill as we adopt the language in various bills that have been reported from the finance committees. And the first one before us then would be the Commerce Committee report, and they have two bills. So what's before us now then is House File 3172 as amended on Friday, and we'll be adding the Commerce article, and give you a chance to get up there. Representative Atkins, if you'd care to, we'll take them one at a time. So if you want to make your first motion.
Mr. Chairman, I think the committee would like to work on 3264 first.
Yeah, that's the one we have, or I have listed first, the Racing Commission.
So I'd move 3264 for inclusion in 3172. And very briefly, Mr. Chairman, and just so we're clear, I think everybody is probably here on 3264, the Racing Commission bill, just by a show of hands. Everybody that's here on the Racing Commission. All right. Mr. Chairman, in light of that, I won't spend very much time on 3264. This is $185,000 out of the special revenue fund established by the Minnesota Racing Commission with unexpended licensing fees that have fallen into that account over the years. The funds, the $185,000, is designated for one-time expenditures. It has bipartisan support coming out of the Commerce Committee. There was no objection from members on either side. Those one-time items are, for example, the former deputy director's lawsuit settlement, which tallies $75,000 with costs. It goes to part of the salary and benefits for the new deputy director that will be coming on board, and $90,000 for additional anticipated operating costs. As anybody that's followed the Racing Commission over the last few years knows, they're starting to turn a chapter with a new executive director and kind of getting things are going in the right direction at this point, but there are a number of things like investigative costs and lawsuit costs that are being resolved with this appropriation. Mr. Chairman, unless there's additional questions about that, I would ask for members' support.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Well, seeing none, then, Representative Atkins, would you like to renew your motion?
I will, Mr. Chairman. I'll renew my motion. I lost my text, but I believe it's to insert the content of 3264, the first engrossment into House File 3172, the separate article on commerce.
You remembered it to the letter. Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Atkins, your House File 3182.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 3182, I'll move House File 31, I believe it's 83.
It goes into 3182. Moving 3183.
Yeah. The first engrossment for inclusion in House File 3172.
Or 3172, yeah.
And, Mr. Chairman, and we don't look for testimony, but I do have folks here in the event that there are questions from members. Very simply, this is Representative Radinovich's bill. It's notable, though, that was brought on behalf of the Mille Lacs, Lake Mille Lacs Tourism Board or Council, on behalf of Representatives Radinovich, Ward, Purcell, McNamara, Erdahl, and others. Representative Erickson was also present, as members of the Commerce Committee will remember. We have a walleye crisis at Lake Mille Lacs, where they've fallen very much on hard times. The aim of this bill is to move $100,000 from the Explore Minnesota Tourism marketing budget to the Lake Mille Lacs Tourism Board's marketing budget for a very specific targeted effort by the Lake Mille Lacs Tourism Group aimed at trying to appeal, in these difficult walleye times, to try to appeal to anglers who seek pike and smallmouth bass. Again, it had bipartisan support in the committee and moved out of the committee on a unanimous basis to this committee, Mr. Chairman. And with that, I'm happy to answer questions. I also, as you noted, have a friend here to help answer questions as well, if there are any.
Okay, and I should restate the Atkins motion because I gave the wrong number initially. It's you want to move House File 3183, the first engrossment for inclusion, in House File 3172. I think I read.
Yes, Mr.
3172.
Chairman.
So that is the motion before us. It's been explained. Any discussion? Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins. I served on the Advisory Council for Tourism for a number of years, and I know that everyone applies for those grants or can, and I'm just kind of curious why this is an exception and how the Department of Tourism, how they feel about this. Are they in support or do they have an opinion?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, I would be inserting my opinion for the what was attested to at the Commerce Committee hearing was two items. One is that this is a crisis-level discussion that we're having. And you're right, there is a grant-making authority that the Explore Minnesota Tourism Board has. The aim of this legislation, again, on a bipartisan basis, was to recognize that the crisis-level discussion that we're having with respect to this and devote that $100,000 specifically to that. I think it's fair to say that if Explore Minnesota had their way, that they would probably prefer grant making, but they don't, in my conversations with them, they don't object or find any fault in the idea that there needs to be additional marketing with respect to Mille Lacs. They too recognize the crisis level discussion or situation that we found ourselves in.
Representative Barnes said. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, Representative Atkins renews his motion to insert the content of House File 3183, first engrossment, into House File 3172 in the separate article on commerce. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
We'll now go to Representative Marquardt.
Good
Report.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I move House File 3171, second engrossment, for inclusion into House File 3172.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much. Members, last year, our number one goal in the education bill was to put every child on the path to the world's best workforce, and we did that by making sure that our dollars went to efforts and strategies that had a proven track record of improving student achievement and closing the achievement gap. This supplemental bill for education just builds upon that work and builds upon the momentum of that bill into this year. So, members, you've got some handouts that I'd like to allude to first before I kind of go over things that may guide you. You should have kind of five different handouts, and two of those deal with the spreadsheet, one with the aid and one with the levies. And I'm not going to go off of these because I think it's going to be simpler in just a second. And then you have a run of all of your districts. And that's a landscape. And I guess the numbers to look at there would be the fifth column with the numbers. It's FY15 increase in total revenue. You can go by your districts. Your districts are by number. And then if you want to see the total dollars per student, that's in the very last column. So that's kind of the important numbers, if you will. And then you have another sheet that deals with equity change, and that's another landscape. And that has to do with a equity change that we're making that impacts a number of school districts. And you can see the net amount is in the final column there that would impact those school districts. And finally, Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to be going off of this sheet right here that says 2014 House Education Finance Committee targets. And I think that's the easiest way probably where you actually see what the numbers are and where those dollars are going to. So, Mr. Chair, I guess I can just briefly run over each area, if that would be fine, on where those dollars are going. Okay.
That would be
Members, Mr. Chair, our target was $75 million. About $54 million of those dollars, over 70% of the total target, goes into a 1% increase on the formula. That's basically a $58 per student increase. And that gives districts the most flexibility. It gets out to all the districts, and it's the best way to enable our districts to get to meeting the goals of the world's best workforce. One of the big issues this year was teacher evaluation, and I'm not going to pretend at all that this 1% increase will deal with that, but districts will be able to I think, come up with very good plans, and these are dollars that will help them to do that. We'll also help schools with remedial classes, with reducing class sizes, and again, meeting the goals of the world's best workforce. The second major area in the bill has to do with English language learners. What we're doing there, $5.4 million. And, you know, if we're really going to get to the achievement gap, this is the group we need to really target. And so what it does, it moves from 5 to 6 years of funding and also moves the formula from $704 to $726. And you know, if anyone has questions, Representative Mariani worked very, very hard on that bill, those portions. The next major component of the bill is the telecommunications access. That is $5 million, and that would pay for telecommunication and internet costs for schools. Right now, they have to send in for unreimbursed costs. School districts need to, and right now they're getting paid back about 40%. This would pay them back 100%, basically, give or take a little bit. This would cover all of the school districts. Unreimbursed costs for telecommunications and internet access. Next area there, achievement zones. That's Neighborhood Association zones in Minneapolis and the Promise Neighborhood in St. Paul. These are multi-generational efforts to try to close the achievement gap and bringing all the stakeholders of the communities together. That's $2.2 million. The reduced lunch, which was passed off the House floor, is in here. That's $3.5 million. School readiness helps 3 to 5 year olds get better prepared for entering school. That's an increase of about 20%. Current funding is about $10 million. That would increase it another two. The public employee insurance program, that $294,000, would be funding, dealing with the health insurance bill that's moving forward. State Academy's base increase, that's $300,000 on about an $18 million budget. That was also in the governor's program. State Academy's one-to-one supports for special education. That's, I guess, into the tails. Another one which deals with levy into the tails, Safe Schools, allows them to increase that $5. The Reading Corps, early childhood literacy program, a very effective program, $500,000. Restrictive procedures, this would help schools with high use of prone restraints, $250,000. Adult basic education increase from 2.5% to 3.0% inflation, $213,000. Developmental screening for age 3 and age 4 increases that reimbursement by $5. Recovery program for $500,000 for 4 schools in Minnesota that deals with alcohol and drug substance abuse and working with students there. The Works and Headwater Science Center grants deal with STEM programming. There are some studies, an inventory of vocational technical programs, $150,000, maltreatment reporting, $85,000, rulemaking, $40,000, and then some funding for the Board of Administrators and Board of Teaching to deal with some of the changes made to the Minnesota teacher license exams. There's a QCOMP teacher evaluation alignment. Another major area of increase is concurrent enrollment, $1.9 million. Right now, schools can get up to $150 per class that a kid takes in concurrent enrollment. That's where they take a college class in the high school. And right now, they're getting reimbursed at about $38. So this would raise that maybe up to $70, not quite double. Then we get to, well, the debt service equalization, that's to make sure we keep a zero levy target, so those equalization factors are increased. There's a consolidation transition aid, $1.7 million. That's to bring in, to bring cooperative schools together. They bring a high school together, keep the elementary separate, and that is up on the Iron Range. We have debt service for schools that have experienced a disaster since 2005, and that would raise the equity 3 times the average. So it's going to make these districts, it's going to make it a little easier to help pass a bond issue there. Equity revenue changes, that's that one sheet I gave you. Basically, right now we have a problem that some scenario that you've got 7 county area, and if you have your district office in that 7 county metro area, you get 25% increase on an equity funding. Well, there's a number of districts that they've got portions of their district, but their office is in there. We've included that up to an 11-county area, so it brings in, I think, probably a more fair situation there. And then a Rosemount, Apple Valley, Eagan, lease levy transportation hub. So, Mr. Chair, those are the funding items on the bill, and I would be willing to answer questions at this time.
Okay. Let's see. Representative Woodard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Marquardt. And, you know, one thing is absent that we talked about extensively in committee, and that is the early learning scholarships. Can you kind of walk through the prioritization that went through that excluded the early learning scholarships, which has a lot of bipartisan support?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Woodard. That's an important question. And I remember this is a supplemental budget. And as I said on the outset, this is building on the momentum that we started last year and building on that bill from last year. And everyone needs to remember that last year we increased investment in our early learning scholarships by $40 million. And up to that point, it was a total of six. So we increased that by sevenfold because we know the earlier we can start, the better that is. At the same time, we started full funding next year of all-day, everyday kindergarten. And so my thoughts here, and even Mr. Carter, who's in charge of the Office of Early Learning, said the other day that it's probably too early to know kind of the full results of what we know about that. It's a new program, basically, because we expanded it so immensely last year. That I thought it was important with a $75 million target, and the committee thought it was important to make sure we got dollars out to everyone. We really raised the bar last year, requiring districts to strive to get to the world's best workforce. And if you remember, members of the committee, that's 100% graduation rate, getting every kid ready for career in college. It's completely closing the achievement gap, have everyone reading by third grade at the third grade level and so forth, and having people ready to go for kindergarten. So we thought that was really important, and we also put it into other areas that also, just like early learning, has huge impacts on closing the achievement gap. So I guess if you had, you know, another, if this was a budget year where you're in there, it certainly probably would have been included. But we made huge investments last year, and we still need to kind of find out what we're seeing with what we did last year, too.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that is obviously the priorities that have to, the prioritization that has to occur in committee. I guess what I would say is we heard testimony that the additional money would actually ensure that the money that's been allocated already is spent efficiently. So hopefully we can still continue to talk about that and some of the policy implications within the early learning scholarships that are causing us not to spend the money and target the money where we initially intended. So hopefully we'll continue that discussion. I didn't hear much about the Promise Neighborhood, ongoing appropriation for the Promise Neighborhood. And I know that that is actually going to fund navigators that will do things well beyond the scope of education. So the question, Chair Marquardt, is, have we ever done that before? Why are we using K-12 funds to provide ongoing appropriations to a program that has limited potential effect on the achievement gap?
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, I think we heard some compelling testimony when the groups were before us. And, you know, our major number one goal is to close the achievement gap. And studies will show you that a lot of times that achievement gap, of course, really increases before you ever hit school. And so there's a lot of things outside the school realm from birth to age five, even beyond, that really is outside the scope of the school. It's family, it's, you know, other stakeholders in the community. And what I think is unique about both of the programs there is that it isn't just one faceted. It's multi-generational, where you're looking at, you know, what are some of the causes of poverty, and what does that mean, and how can you strengthen the family, because that's going to be the key, getting them into kindergarten and first grade and so forth. So I think, you know, we looked, they also had some results, if I remember, that showed progress, if I'm not mistaken there. But they also have to have navigators to get out and bring people together, because we know it's not just going to be the school that's going to narrow that achievement gap. It's going to be a lot of other things, especially in neighborhoods of poverty. So I think it's a unique approach. I thought they had very compelling testimony, and I do think it's going to be part of ultimately narrowing that achievement gap.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I certainly, it's a laudable effort, but I think actually putting the burden on our K-12 system to also raise families and to eliminate poverty is quite a burden to put on our K-12 budget when we know that it is the teacher that stands in front of those students that makes the biggest impact. And so I certainly encourage us to really focus our funding and prioritize that, and making sure that the money that we're spending in K-12 education actually goes towards K-12 education. And then finally, my final question, Mr. Chair and Chair Marquardt, is on the PEEP funding, the $294,000 that you've got for PEEP marketing. That really doesn't seem like it is a level playing field for our health plans that do a pretty good job today of our benefits package for teachers. So can you kind of walk through why we think we ought to be subsidizing PEEP in a open marketplace for health plans?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard. That bill is still moving forward. And what that $294,000 is that every school district would have to go out and get three bids. And one of those bids is through PEEP. So a lot of that is for them to do the, to prepare the bids and so forth. The policy of that bill is not in here. We're just funding that portion of it. And I don't know if we need to discuss the policy on that, but I think that is still a moving target. And, you know, at one time that was $1 million. Now it's $294,000. So I don't know if we want to get into a health care debate or not, but we...
Well, I just might mention we got a lot of... Yeah. Conversations going on in the audience. I'm sure they're relevant to what's perhaps being discussed here, but maybe it's the design of this room, but I'm getting a lot of the feedback back here in the corners. So those of you that have some of the side conversations going in the audience, if you could maybe step out temporarily into the hallway, that would be appreciated. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick follow-up. So if that PEEP bill that's actually running separately on the policy piece doesn't make it, or there isn't a grand bargain on the PEEP bill, would that $294,000 just be put back on the bottom line, or would it sit in an account waiting for a future legislature?
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair and Representative Woodard, and maybe Mr. Marks would be better. I would think it would just go to the bottom line. It would be my thought.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, if you look at the language that... It's Section 3 that starts on the bottom of page 71. But the reference here is that line 29, was, well, that first sentence is that if a, what's related to that bill, and then paragraph B is if a bill meeting these requirements is enacted, the Commissioner of Management and Budget must report. The lines 29 and 30, it's if a bill similar to what's proposed in House File 2180 is enacted in the 2014 regular session. So I think this appropriation is contingent on a bill on House File 2180 or a similar bill being enacted. If that was not enacted, then this appropriation would not occur. It would stay in the general fund.
Representative Mulray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had no intention to get into this debate until I heard really 19th century outlook from one of the questions when saying that this isn't the money for NAS and the Promise Zone isn't going to go to lessen the achievement gap is just so far beyond all recent research for the last 10 or more years. Everything shows that the approach that's being done by those is the only way we're going to actually achieve the reduction in the achievement gap. And the fact is that those navigators are totally tied into the educational experience, getting the early child, even the home health care to teach brain development. It's just everything in the country in research in recent years is showing that that's the way to do it. And so what Representative Marquardt said is completely right, that this is going to be the way that we can achieve a reduction in the achievement gap. And you can talk, actually, the University of Minnesota has one of the top schools in the country, the Institute on Child Development, on brain research, and I think you need to, over the interim, go over there. Not every kid, I think, I'm not sure, but there's a lot of students, I think, from my alma mater. Is that STA up there? Yep. And Not every kid in Minnesota is the same as when I went to St. Thomas Academy. There's a lot of kids that don't have the same advantages, and this approach is just plain the best way to reduce the achievement gap.
Do you still have your uniform, Representative Mohler?
Mr. Chair, yes, but even though I was valedictorian, they've got an awful lot more medals than I had up there on my uniform. And, Mr. Chair, it certainly doesn't fit anymore.
I thought of that, but I didn't want to ask you that question. Yeah. Okay, Representative Oliver, were you done? Representative Mariani was next.
Mr. Chair, very, very quickly, members, I just wanted to make a couple observations, and thank you, Chair Marquardt, for your work this year. On the ELL issue, Mr. Chair, you and I have been here long enough, we recall this. We used to have a seven-year cap for ELL student eligibility. It's been a good 10 years since we lowered that to a five-year cap, and frankly, we did it really only because we were under financial stress at that time as a state. There was no good, you know, pedagogical reason to do that. Research, in fact, argued against it. And so in many ways, one of the things that we're doing with this bill is, you know, addressing the way that we have steadily over the last decade divested state resources from our K-12 schools at the appropriate level. And we're still not even there. I represent Mark White. You know, we're not at the seven-year cap.
Right.
My hope is that we can revisit that conversation as appropriate. So I just wanted to lay that groundwork. And then on Representative Mullery's point, and Representative Woodard, I would agree with you on this. I think that the Promised Neighborhood effort, well, I disagree, and I agree. I do think that it's an important investment in part of the state. And, in fact, we made this kind of investment probably about 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, when we funded the Achievement Plus Zones. We then divested ourselves of that in recent years. However, I think where I would agree with you and Representative Marquardt, if we're all privileged to be back here next year, I think we ought to address this, is that as intuitively important it is for me, intuitively understanding this is a good investment, we still need a policy frame within which to make it. Otherwise, we're just going to continue to ask the question that Representative Mullery has you know, tried to answer here about this interplay between our public schools and the rest of our public delivery systems. We still don't yet have a strong policy frame to guide that into the future, and I still think this is a good investment, but if I were to point to a flaw in this particular piece, it's that we don't have that yet built into state statute, and it would certainly be my intent in the near future to build that into it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess just as a follow-up very quickly on, and I won't spend too much time on this, but the idea that it's a 19th century idea that the most important thing in our K-12 education system is to have a teacher standing in front of them that is the best that they can be and that has the tools and resources that they need to be the best they can be is not, if that's a 19th century idea, then it's a darn good one that our forefathers came up with. And I would say that, you know, this is not an argument that poverty is a good thing. This is an argument that education is what fixes poverty. Poverty is not the cause of a bad education. And the fact is that we continue to spend a lot of money on some of our bigger school districts, and we now are going to give an additional allocation to an additional allocation of $1.1 million for the St. Paul Promise neighborhoods and then another $1.1 for the Northside Achievement Zone after we're already spending a lot of money in Minneapolis and St. Paul. So maybe future legislature will look at this and say maybe we need the Belle Plaine School District to have an allocation of $1.1 million so that they can fund their needs of poverty and all kinds of things. I just think that taking this out of the education budget is the wrong place. That certainly Health and Human Services and the other groups can look at the idea of having navigators that address other issues. But the fact is, this is a pretty large increase in the scope of what we do in K-12 education. And by doing that,
It also means we're making we have to prioritize things. It means that the early learning scholarships aren't getting the money that Representative Winkler was asking for. It means that we're not putting additional money on the formula. There's all kinds of good needs out there for us to spend money on, and when we spend it on this out of the K-12 budget, that's a pretty good expansion of our role. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
I was just going to mention with a little history back in the days when I chaired the Education Committee and Governor Carlson was in office. He proposed that a number of human services programs come into the Education Committee so there would be better coordination. He even advocated the renaming of the department, Children, Families, and Learning. I don't know that that was particularly important other than he was trying to convey a message, but the important thing that we were working on at the time was how do you better coordinate some of these needs in the community with education. And I think it was Representative, well, I won't say which representative, but he is on the committee, accused me at the time of trying to take over the entire state budget. That wasn't me. That was the way the governor had aligned the education-related budgets through Department of Finance, as we called MMB back in those days. But there was a lot of interest in how you coordinate human services with the needs of children. Really, yet all the way through the entire K-12 system. So, just a little editorializing. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is just for the record. I've been looking for Representative Swatsky, and I don't see her in the room, but we had some discussion on her data language with her special ed reporting efficiencies. And as I look at this, some of the things that still need work. And so, Representative Marquardt, we were assured in civil law that our concerns would be addressed as the bill moved through the process. Unfortunately, it was only last night that I realized that this was included in your bill, so I would just like your assurances that we can continue to work on this before it gets to the floor so that parents have control over this sensitive information and how it's used, distributed, and accessed.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbert, yes, I will get with Representative Zawadzki and others to take a look at this, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Again, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Marquardt, you heard me earlier ask the chair the number of FTEs that are created to this, and I see that there's a lot of money here going towards the department's budget. So how much can we expect in an FTE increase for in your bill in its entirety?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, what we have from the Minnesota Department of Education is a 1.0 FTE for 1 year to conduct the study on career and technical education. That would be just a 1 year position, one full-time equivalency for 1 year, and then a 0.75 FTE ongoing for the maltreatment portion of the bill that the department will need to track. So 1.0, 1 year temporary, 0.75 ongoing. And I know also, Representative Anderson, you've asked about fees in the past. There are no additional fees in here, but Mr. Chair, I do want to mention about the decrease in fees. Last year's bill, when we passed all day everyday kindergarten, will reduce, eliminate the need for $26 million in all day everyday kindergarten fees to parents. So that $26 million will be eliminated. Also, this bill, under the school lunch, will eliminate about $3.5 million in fees. And finally, if we can get to the world's best workforce and have everyone ready for career in college, it would save people about $5 million of remedial classes they take in college. That is does absolutely get some no new credits or anything like that. So lots of fee reduction here, ultimately, in these efforts.
And
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for adding that portion on there, too. I would hope that we at some point look at the property tax increases that resulted in the bill from last year, too. But do you have the numbers for the FTEs from last year's bill, too? Do you have those on hand by chance? And if you don't, if you can just get them to me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I remember you asking that question so we could go back. I don't have those numbers with me right now.
Okay. If you can get them to me at some point, that'd be great. Thank you.
Very good.
Okay, any further discussion on the Marquardt motion? Well, then, Representative Marquardt, do you want to renew your motion?
I move to insert the contents of House File 3171, second engrossment, into House File 3172 as separate articles on K through 12 education finance.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No. No.
Motion carried.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you so much.
Okay, the next bill, and it's, I think it's now been distributed. It was just simply too big to put in our folders initially. And, keeping up the bipartisan tradition of having the biggest single article in the bill, at least in terms of number of pages, is the Health and Human Services section. So, Representative Huntley, I think everybody now has the bill. And so, Representative Huntley, welcome. Mr. Berg, welcome. And if you would like to make a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move House File 2150, the first engrossment, for inclusion in House File 3172. And I have four amendments to get the bill in the order before presenting it.
I'm just told there's five amendments.
There's an amendment to an amendment.
An amendment to the amendment. Okay. Representative Huntley, the motion is before us. So do you want to go through and take these amendments now before
yes.
you present the bill? Okay. If you want to take the first amendment, then the A64.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A64 amendment.
And you want to explain the amendment?
And what this does is raise the increase to home and community-based services from 4% to 5%.
Okay,
that's about a $16 million increase.
And that's the one we discussed briefly when we modified the House budget resolution. So any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Huntley, the next amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A62 amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us, and if you would like to explain the amendment.
This relates to two things. One, federal law is changing the way that we pay hospitals. We're going from, like 1,000 ways to measure what they do to about 5,000, if I remember correctly. So it's a big increase, big computing change. We have to do it, and it has to be done by October 1st. So that's part of this amendment. At the same time, the department would like to rebase the way we pay hospitals. And they do not have the complete data yet. There is a potential agreement between the Hospital Association and the Department of Human Services to work this out, and so there will probably be an amendment to this before we get to the floor. So there's two things in this. One is the adapting the new federal requirements, and secondly, rebasing hospital payment, which is something they've been trying to do for about 3 years.
Okay. So any further, Representative Huntley, were you done?
No.
Any further discussion on the A62, Representative Abler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, they're called the ICD-10. And it's much more detailed. If you're a data wonk, it gives much more specifics as to the conditions that are being treated. It's been put off a couple of years. There's actually an outside chance it might be put off one more year, even though it was never going to be put off again. The Medicare fix pending at the federal level has a sentence that says it's put off one more year, even though they promised it wouldn't, which the small people are happy about it. The big ones have been planning for this. And it could turn the whole thing on its head, and Representative Huntley was totally right about that. I have in this rebasing thing, in 2011, we were just dead broke, and rebasing just kept getting put off all the time, and part of the budget resolution then was just to quit pretending and then just not include the dollars that were always put off. And so this is a no-money rebasing. And again, to the chair of this committee and the leadership, you can't do rebasing without having winners and losers. And I want to point out to people on line 4.22, where it talks about a no greater or less than a 5% increase or decrease. This could be catastrophic for some hospitals. If you remember the rate setting bill we did in the disability services side, the data was just as bad there. And so we argued for having no change in the rates that were paid to these group homes and the other long-term care providers last year. And at the end, we came up with a plus and minus a half, plus and minus a half, and then 1-1-1. And this makes a lot of people glaze over, but this is how you keep these places open. The original offer from the department then was plus or minus 5. If you remember the 5% campaign, that could be some people would go a minus 5% in their rate, or some would go plus 5%. And so you can see that would, and everybody's learned about the value and of these workers and all that, and all that would be unsustainable for a lot of those places. In the same way, I'm just warning people, if this comes out of this into law at plus or minus 5%, you're going to be having people sitting at that table with their little hospital from wherever going out of business without some money to come their way to fix this. And some people say, well, not to worry, we'll just find more money. Actually, you're spending most of the money, Mr. Chair. You're down to $30 million out of $1.2 billion or something left in this year's surplus, and I couldn't get the amount that's left on the tails. But you're down to well under $1 billion. And so after a while, the money runs out. And so in the design of this thing, it's just important for you as leadership, I'm just a loyal minority member doing my job to point out issues, to make sure that this comes out, in my opinion, plus or minus one, plus or minus a half, something like that as things settle out. And then you might decide next year who's ever in charge to add $10 million, $20 million into this to kind of buy out some of the losers or restructure some of the rates. But if this goes forward into law this way, I will predict you'll have the fear of hospital closures. And so I'm just telling people that. And the Hospital Association is a wonderful group, but bear in mind they have large hospitals and dinky ones. And so they have to come up with a composite message. And so I suggest that we help them by just making aware of this. And so I'm extremely friendly to their work, and their lobbyists are quality. But the department gets kind of stubborn on some of this stuff. And so I'm going to vote for the amendment now, because it just needs to go forward. But for Chair Huntley and others who are going to negotiate this, I just want to caution people about that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor of the A-62 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A-63-A-1 amendment. And before we vote on that, I would like to amend the amendment with the A-66 amendment.
Okay.
And so Mr. Chun can explain that, I hope.
Mr. Chun?
Mr. Chair and members, Randy Chun with House Research. What the A66-1 amendment does is it modifies the rate increase that would be provided to hospitals. In the A63-1 amendment, the rate increase was contingent upon hospitals participating as network providers in insurance affordability programs. The amendment removes that language. It provides a 3% rate increase to all hospitals, and it also makes the increase effective for the period July 1st to December 31st of 2014. And it makes no other changes in the original author's amendment.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment to the amendment? Representative Abel.
Well, just the whole package, Mr. Chair. And, you know, anytime we can get this larger group paying attention to human services issues, it's a really good day. And so not all of you get to serve on that committee, and so Chair Huntley and I just really enjoy bringing all this to the public, and all these environmental lobbyists and agriculture lobbyists and all the rest and the members. But pardon us on the detail, because if we do this wrong, people could come to harm, they could lose their services, they could even come to physical harm. So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chun, maybe, this is just changing the dates, and it doesn't cost anything, and it becomes a one-time rate increase for only 6 months.
Mr. Chun, or Mr. Berg, either one.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the amendment changes the dates, but it doesn't change the source or the amounts of funding. Yeah, you can go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, if you look at the underlying amendment, it does two things at this point relative to the hospital rates. It delays the date for implementation of hospital presumptive eligibility and medical assistance from January 1st of this year to July 1st. Presumptive eligibility was not actually implemented by January 1st, but it is, as you know, part of federal law and needs to go forward as of July 1st. Changing that date, however, will create a one-time savings of $7.7 million in medical assistance. And then the rate increase language that Mr. Chun referred to provides a one-time six-month approximately 3% right. increase on fee-for-service that will spend that exact same $7.7 million. Referring to your comments about trying to work with a deal with the Hospital Association and interested parties that limits negative effects on hospitals, this is feeding into that discussion to provide some one-time funding to ensure that hospitals are not negatively impacted by the whole rebasing. And that discussion is still ongoing, as you know.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Representative Abel.
So I appreciate it. So it is a one-time 3% increase using some other savings. But I just want to caution people as the rebasing goes forward, just to my original point, because you buy a 3% rescue fund, that may be less than the 5%, and the 5% goes forward and actually is totally worn off. The 5% hold harmless is totally gone away, I think, in 2 years. So I'm just cautioning you as these things go forward that the tail effects can be massive on some of these smaller operations. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
How many years, Representative Abler, have you been on that committee?
16, Mr. Chair.
Well, then you've surpassed me. I was 12 years.
Thank you.
Let's see. No further discussion on the amendment to the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We now have the amendment as amended before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Huntley, we now have the A67 amendment before us. That's a technical.
So I would move the A67 amendment, and this is a completely technical amendment agreed to by the Department of Human Services and Health Plans.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, there's not much humor in the Human Services bill, but if you look at line 1.4 of the amendment, it says the commissioner shall share accurate information. So without this law, they would not share accurate information. Thank goodness. So we can assure. So it's good that we can oversee our department. They try to be accurate, Mr. Chair. So I think we should make them be accurate. So vote yes.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor of asking for accurate information signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Now we've gotten to the point where you want to give us the highlights of the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would have Doug Berg sort of roughly go through the spreadsheet. And I will say it's a 208-page bill, which I think is probably the shortest one in this committee that I've ever had. But it's still a lumberjack full employment bill.
You just doubled the size of the original bill, I'm sure. Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think members should have in their packet a legal-sized document spreadsheet titled in the upper right corner, Health and Human Services 2014 Supplemental Budget Tracking House Bill. With the amendments on there, I will note that this spreadsheet notes the bill as it came into this committee. And you will see if you look on line 10 in the fourth column from the right, that as the bill came into this committee, it spent $74,996,000 in general fund money, $4,000 under the original target. If you go three more columns to the right, you'll see that it had tails originally of $580,570,000. If members will jump for just a second to the very last page, you'll see at the bottom a reconciliation to the targets that shows the amendments that were just adopted. The first author's amendment actually deleted one small item from the bill and redistributed the money and the $4,000 that was unspent to the senior nutrition program, and so that made the bill hit the $75 million original target. The 1% amendment for the Hellman community-based service providers then on the very bottom reconciliation shows that the bill as it stands now spends $91,042,000 above it spends that much in general fund money, which is the new target that you just adopted in the budget resolution. And Mr. Chair, I don't know how much detail you want. I'll move at, I guess, pretty high level. There's a lot of stuff in here, but starting on page 2, line 101, this is the salary increase for home and community-based service providers. The numbers that are in front of you are the same as the governor's 4%. The amendment that was just adopted moves that to 5%. There is just below that a line 114 accommodates the effect of minimum wage at nursing facilities. Line 120 was in the bill, but the first author's amendment deleted this item. Was a plug number, and the fiscal note came in at a higher level than was anticipated, and so that item was taken out of the bill in the first amendment. And Mr. Chair, I don't know how much detail you want. Do you want to go through each individual item, or?
Well, I think if you kind of give us the general category and what the changes are,
I'll continue on, Mr. Chair.
People have the spreadsheets. So if they have follow-up questions on some of the detail, that'll be fine.
Moving on, there is an item called the Eagle's Nest Veterans Facility. Representative Ablers, that is in the tails, that accounts for this as a group residential housing facility. There is an item that increases the elderly and disabled excess income standard to 80% in the tails. The governor's item that makes some corrections in the way the home and community-based service provider quality initiative from last year is administered. There are some technical changes at the bottom of page 1 that are budget neutral on implementation of Community First Services, which is the new name for what most members think of as personal care attendants. Moving on to page 3, there is an item, Representative Loeffler's bill, that excludes spousal maintenance agreement payments from eligibility asset tests. There is an item that pays back the University of Minnesota AmPlatz Children's Hospital for a portion of the reduced rate they got from the 2011 rate reduction. There is the item on line 153, which sets a base for MA spending in the Healthcare Access Fund, and it sets that base for fiscal years 16 and 17 at the spending that the Healthcare Access Fund is doing on medical assistance in fiscal year 15. This has the effect of moving $400 million of projected medical assistance costs in 14, 16, and 17 from the Healthcare Access Fund to the general fund. There is, moving down that page, line 159 is the governor's item on funding to implement the Jensen settlement. This is a legal settlement that feeds into the state's Olmstead plan for care of individuals with disabilities, and this is implementing part of the state's legal obligation there. There are some technical changes to the North Star Child Care Foster Care Program. There is an acceleration of the repeal of the MFIP family cap. It was repealed last year, starting on January 1st of next year. This bill moves that date up to July 1st. There is a change to MFIP program that allows more educational opportunities to count as work. There is a small item that creates an appeal process for the nursing home level care process. There is $1.1 million for the Homeless Youth Act. There is $569,000 for the DHS part of the Safe Harbor for Sexually Exploited Youth program at DHS. That's for housing costs for those youth. There is a one-time item on creating a plan to include detox services as a medical assistance benefit. Moving on to page 4, the second item down, line 2 of 7, there is increased funding for senior nutrition programs. There is, moving to line 214 is the governor's item that provides funding for a chemical dependency program. The governor used enterprise funds, administrative funds within that program, plus general fund dollars. The House bill uses only the administrative funds and does not allocate any general fund to it. There is a small item on line 224, one-time funding for the Department of Human Services to create an online training program for interested parties on the civil commitment process. There is the governor's item in the House bill on line 228 that puts a rate adjustment in for the Andrew Residence. This is a facility in Minneapolis that houses people who have mostly schizophrenia, I believe. Line 232 is an item that allows us to coordinate, to link with other states on coordination of benefits so that we can make sure we know who's got third-party insurance and that the state gets paid back where appropriate from third-party insurers. That actually has a small savings. There are, going down that line, there are three items that were mentioned previously on the state-operated services, the sex offender program, and the expert legal review of the sex offender program that are not funded in the House bill. And, Mr. Chair, very quickly at the Department of Health, there is the governor funded, there's a legal settlement that the department reached over the newborn screening program. The governor funded that from the Healthcare Access Fund. The House bill funds that from the general fund. There is a small item for an exemption from the hospital construction moratorium for a facility in Thief River Falls. And the other items there's the Healthy Homes Initiative, which is the department helps screening for lead and mold and other home problems. There is the Safe Harbor Program. This is the other piece of Safe Harbor, which is grants the regional coordinators for prevention of sexual exploitation of youth. And there is a minority health disparity grant program that will fund a number of items related to minority health disparities. All the other items at the health department are either non-general fund or very technical items. And then going to the last page of the spreadsheet, there is $100,000 each year for the Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Office, which is just a general operating increase for that office. Mr. Chair, I'd take any
takes care of the spreadsheet, and if somebody any comments before we go to questions?
We'd be happy to answer questions.
Okay.
As long as Doug is sitting next to me.
We've got a surprise questioner, Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, I'll yield to somebody else if they want to go first.
You're the only one on the list. You're the only one that's been on the list so far.
You know, I
go for it, Jim.
Join the party members. Well, I want to thank Representative Humphrey.
Say that in good humor. That's
oh, I know. I got it. No, this is a
comment. So
yeah, no, this is a really important bill, and there's some important changes that are really very good, and they've gone over some of the highlights of some of the really good things. And if you were listening, there's just a lot to like about some of this. But I just want to point out to members a few other things. One was taken out in the author's amendment. It had to do with, you may have heard about this housing challenge, that we're limited to how dense we can house people with certain kinds of disabilities. And I tried to get as much as I could, and 25% was the amount that I got without being charged. And it turns out that if you want to get rid of it, it's like $30 million in the tails or something. And so Representative Dean has worked very hard with some very well-intended quality advocates about trying to find ways to house certain kinds of individuals in denser settings where there could be choices. And there are some new rules from the feds which I think will allow that to come forward, but it's not in this bill and not in this time. And I don't know if it's rescuable along the way or if it's just dead because of the cost, but that's one thing. There's a few things I wanted to bring up, and mostly on the avenue of the leadership of this House needing to understand what decisions you're about to make as you move this bill forward, and I predict it will pass today. On page 153, in the miscellaneous section, I want to remind members, miscellaneous does not mean trivial. It just means where else do you stick it. Section 1 of Article 6 forecasts Minnesota Care out of the general fund for any money that's not available in the healthcare access fund. And so that seems like a small, it's only year 2018 and thereafter. It strikes four words and adds four other words. This single change, which I don't believe the governor had this, right? Okay. Just to give Chair Huntley credit, at least he finds a way to deal with the deficit in healthcare access fund caused by the basic health plan, which is the new Minnesota Care. And I passed out to people the latest forecast numbers on that, just so you know the kind of math we're dealing with. And I can't find my copy. I got it. But so I'll get into that in a second. But so there's a huge deficit. And there's reasons, and this is not the final numbers I passed out there, preliminary, because there's some money coming back from the feds about what they're going to reimburse us on the basic health plan. And this is going to serve up to the number aren't even current. The current number of people enrolled in this cycle is about 28,000. They're expecting over 100,000 in disenrollment, and it's fallen short of projections. But this is not a cheap group to insure. So people between 138 and 200% of poverty. And so we've chosen to cover them actually very well, and the program that they have is in the platinum metal level thing, better than platinum, which means it has a very low co-insurance payment for the client to pay, and a very low copay when you go to see the doctor. And so if you make up to maybe like $20,000 as a single person, you can get into this plan if you're above the medical assistance level. But if you make a dollar more than that, and you're just then you have to go to the exchange and buy a bronze plan, which has 40% patient-covered insurance. So you go from like the world's finest plan to like a really very, very bare bones one. And so somehow we're okay that it's good enough for the guy making $20,001, and for the guy making $19,000, we're going to give him this deluxe plan. And so plan design does have consequences. And so let's say you want to make sure that $19,000 person gets an awesome plan, and who could disagree with that? I'm going to tell you it's going to cost you some money. And so if you look at this one pager I passed out, which is from the department, and it's just copied off of their attachment, it was expected that over the 3 years, this particular plan would cost $380 million. That's the first column based upon the forecast.
turns out it's going to, and turns out because we didn't get quite as much federal money, which is yet to be determined, it's going to cost $1.3 billion, which is a factor of three, over three times as much, and for a net change of $913 million over the three-year time. And so usually the federal government bails us out on these kind of things, and there will be some bailout, but the number, I don't know what it is, $100 million or something, perhaps, maybe more or less. But that's got to come from somewhere. There was a surplus in the healthcare access fund, which got eaten up mostly by the designing the $380 million that we were going to buy. And so if members, if you look at page of the spreadsheet, look at line 21 and 22, you'll see the last number in that line is minus $647 million. And you'll see the governor's number is that same number on that line. Kudos to Chair Huntley for trying to solve it.
Yeah.
He took $407 million out of the general fund, which you're about to approve, to buy it down. The Senate does even more. The governor did nothing to address it whatsoever. So if you think it's good to take it out of the general fund and just keep buying this better than platinum plan, then that's the decision you're making today. My question during the conference committee over and over was like, what are we buying and what's it going to cost? And can we afford this? And the answer was, well, no answer. Now you see what that plan design is costing. And so there is a surplus in the outbiennium of some $2 billion something dollars. But these, this $407 million, $407 million is actually taking money out of that, leaving a deficit still of $239 million. And what you're doing in the amendment on Article 6, line 153.18 is saying any further deficits will come out of the general fund. And it's a policy decision, one the governor chose not to address for his own reasons, and one which is going to be a cost you'll be having to bear in this committee, who's ever sitting in that chair, be it Republican or Democrat. This cost, when this becomes law, will be in the forecast as an expense. And so I'm concerned that the generous benefit we're providing to this, these 25 or 50,000 people is actually to take all the money away from the future K-12 chair, the future HHS chair for another COLA, from the environment people and the road people and all that. And but it, so it's not a technical amendment, even though it's considered miscellaneous. So that's my advice to the committee, just to understand what you're buying. So that's, if there's a singular big deal in the bill, that's it. And the jury's out on what it's truly going to cost. It might be less than 913 in the difference, but it's going to be certainly more than half a billion. And so just advice to the chair. So that's that. And if anybody wants to talk about that, I'll yield for maybe Representative Huntley wants to comment as well. And I
Representative Huntley.
Well, there are two separate items here. One is why do we have a difference? Why is there less money in there than we thought was going to be in there when we passed the bill last year? The answer is that we did such a good job with our health plans in reducing the cost of plans in the exchange. We are the lowest cost in the country. And most people are going to see their premiums cut in half if they had them before, based on what the bids were to insure people. So that's the one problem. And the reason that hurts us is it doesn't hurt us, it's good news, is because the feds were supposed to pay for the 133 up to 200 at about 95% of what it would have cost if those people had been in the exchange. Well, that number turned out to be a lot less than we predicted a year ago. The second reason we have a shortage in the healthcare access fund, which is completely different, is that we've been transferring over $400 million a year out of the healthcare access fund into the general fund to cover people on medical assistance. And the healthcare access fund was never, ever intended to fund medical assistance. But we've been pumping about $400 million a year out of there. And so if you want the docs mad at you, tell them that we're using their provider tax to pay for medical assistance. So we're trying to slow that down and not transfer as much out of the healthcare access fund into the general fund. And medical assistance was always supposed to be paid for by the general fund.
Okay, we have a couple of people who want to comment or ask questions. Representative Dean, I think you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Huntley, and just following up from where we were in the committee, I tried to do a little bit of homework in between to figure out some of this as best I could. And I just want to start out on the spreadsheet on page 3 of 6 in lines 155 through 158 and those transfers. Just maybe just discuss a little bit about where those numbers are and what that means in the 16, 17 years.
Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, just technically what happens here is there was not a base rider adopted last year for the direct spending on medical assistance out of the healthcare access fund. That's typically we don't have base riders for forecasted programs. After the bill passed last year, Minnesota Management and Budget started thinking that because the healthcare access fund side of the program, it wasn't clear that that would be a forecasted number, and so they decided it really should have a base rider to put in the numbers that were on the spreadsheet last year. That's Chairman Huntley referred to around $425 million a year in 16 and 17 of anticipated direct spending from the healthcare access fund for medical assistance. What the base rider here does is that it sets the number at the amount that is projected to be spent in from that fund in 2015, fiscal 15, which is $221 million a year. It straight lines that number, thus saving the healthcare access fund an anticipated $403.6 million in expenditures in 16 and 17, and putting that same amount of anticipated expenditures onto the general fund side of the medical assistance program, which is forecasted in law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Berg, you know, that forecasted change is a policy change, and I understand why that is being anticipated, but it's also a policy change that we need to take a look at in the relationship between the healthcare access fund and the general fund. What does really get a lot of providers, everybody in the healthcare community angry is when we use those healthcare access fund dollars, the 2% sick tax, for other things. When we use the healthcare access fund to balance our budget by shifting it over and helping ourselves to those dollars, that's a big deal. When we look at the scale of that shift, the one-time shift in the last biennium to balance our budget, and then projecting that forward, it's a bigger deal. And we're talking about trying to now push that money back into the healthcare access fund because we went from a projected gigantic surplus to now a projected deficit by this change. And I'm wondering why we were so surprised that this is going to be costing us so much money as a factor several hundred percent off and hundreds of millions of dollars off when we were looking at this last year, looking at what the projected plan costs were. And when we had the projected costs moving ahead, on what were we relying for this projected costs that we were so far off? Was that MMB's fault, or was that some other entity's fault, or where were we really far off last year?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, an important point here is that the cost is not what is really changing here. It's the reimbursement to the healthcare access fund from the federal side of the equation. To my knowledge, and I have to check with the department, I don't think we are projecting that the costs are going up. It's just who's available to pay for them. The difficulty here was last year when the legislature set up the new Minnesota Care, new basic health plan, the insurance rates that the exchange would be offering were not known. And there's a fiscal note that the Department of Human Services produced and the Minnesota Management and Budget signed off on that the legislature used as its guidelines for doing the new program that indicated there'd be enough money there, but the insurance rates weren't, they didn't exist at that point. And by the fall, when the insurance rates in the exchange came in, and as Chairman Huntley mentioned, they came in significantly lower than anybody had estimated, thus reducing the amount that the federal government would reimburse us, because they reimburse us at 95, essentially 95% of the, I think it's the second lowest silver plan. And that just was much, much cheaper when the rates came out than had been anticipated.
And Mr. Chair, and Representative Huntley and Mr. Berg, I appreciate that, but we did rely on that data to make our projections, and it drastically affected our balance and our ability to spend money out of both the general fund and the health care access fund. And it was not off by a very small amount, it was off by an incredibly large amount. And I'm wondering if that was the MMB's documents or how much of that was reliant upon the study that was done by, I believe it was Gruber Gorman, that predicted how much the health care funds would be impacted and what our costs were going to be. Can you talk a little bit about which numbers we used in anticipating our, how far off we've gotten?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, I would have to go back and look at the fiscal note from last year again to see exactly where the, certainly the Gruber-Gorman report fed into the data that was used to produce the fiscal note for the basic health plan, the revised Minnesota Care. So, without looking at it, I can't say more than that. I don't know if anybody in the department can comment at this point, but they certainly used Gruber-Gorman's estimates. I don't honestly recall, maybe Chairman Atkins will, whether there were estimates of the cost of insurance in the Gruber-Gorman report. I don't think there were. I think they were only based on enrollment, but I hesitate to say that very confidently. I would have to go back and look at that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to wrap up, I mean, that's the biggest piece of this that I continue to have trouble with, is how we could have gotten that far off and got it that wrong. And if we were relying on that information, that why would we be so shocked that Minnesota is a low-cost provider of health care when we've always been either number one, number two, or number three in cost? And how would we be that far off in our anticipated costs to the system? So I need to learn a little bit more about how those numbers were projected.
Representative Dabney, may we speak with you for a moment, please?
What? I guess not part of the official committee business.
Wow. Future announcements would probably go through the chair. I don't but
that worked better.
Maybe we can ask Representative Dabney to explain. But at any rate, Representative Dean, are you...
I apologize.
What do you want to do to get
now that Representative Dabney's gotten to where he needs to go, I think we can go back to what we were trying to talk about. But I do think that that how we got to where we got is going to be a very important thing. And as this bill moves to the floor, many of the members on my side of the aisle and other side of the aisle will be very interested in the cost projections that were used for this, that created an unnecessary hassle for Representative Huntley on his last omnibus bill here. So I think I'm going to be continuing to help ask Mr. Marks and others to help me along with my spreadsheet deficiencies, and natural and otherwise, between now and the floor, and trying to figure this out. Thank you.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, I should have handed out that I have a sheet upstairs that I can't remember if it's the Kaiser Foundation or Robert Wood Johnson or the Urban League that looked at what the insurance rates were in, I think, 8 different states before the Affordable Care Act was passed for small businesses. And it was roughly, in Minnesota, it was about $480 per month per person. What came through on the bids was in the individual market, which is different than the small group market, but what came in Minnesota was about $150 a month is what the rates are. So there's a dramatic decrease in the rates for these individuals. In almost all the other states where they made that comparison, the rates were fairly similar. So something happened in Minnesota that made the insurance companies come in with much lower rates than anybody could have possibly forecast.
Okay, Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And one comment that Chair Huntley made was that in Minnesota it's the lowest cost. And if you look at it statewide, that's certainly a true statement, but it doesn't give me much comfort when in southeastern Minnesota we're 2 or 3 times that. So in southeastern Minnesota we have far less coverage, higher deductibles, more cost. I have constituents calling all the time. They're losing their doctors. They're not in the plan, and they're losing their plans. So when that statement is made, please don't forget about the Southeast. In fact, Representative Liebling, Chair Liebling, has a bill to lower my rates that are 2 to 3 times higher and spread them out to Representative Beard, Representative Detmer, and everybody else. So I'm supporting the Liebling bill because I think we need Beard and Detmer and Woodard to pay for me. Of course, that's my opinion, but it just kind of, so we have to be a little bit careful with that. And of course, in the Liebling bill, Minneapolis and St. Paul are carved out, so they're not included. So because I'd really love to go after them to help pay my bills. It just kind of reminds me of two things. I'm kind of a history buff, and over 100 years ago today was when they started construction on the Titanic. Just for you history buffs out there, and I think it has a lot of relevance for today. Also, it kind of reminds me of, I mean, this is extremely, extremely serious. The numbers that Doc Abler, or Representative Abler, has put out, we have a huge problem here. And it kind of reminds me, and no fault of Chair Huntley, I'm not inferring that at all. It's just we have a massive problem here. And it kind of reminds me of when I was on a trip with Representative Hornstein in Israel, driving through the Valley of Armageddon, it just seems so peaceful. But I think we all know what's going to happen there someday. And it's that, well, it's not quite that serious, but we have a massive, massive problem and that we have to face. We're talking about costs into the future that are simply out of control. So I think we'll be spending a lot more time on this, and it's a serious, serious issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, perhaps we can, because we do have other bills on the agenda, and we're going to meet until 1, although after session if we're not done. Maybe the ranking minority member, Representative Abler, if you've got any concluding comments, I think I've got you on the list, and then maybe we can
I appreciate it.
Wrap and things up on this particular.
Mr. Chair, I know that there's a big crowd for other bills, but this is the Ways and Means Committee, and I think we've been respectful in our discussion, and it's been relatively time-limited. So
just reminding people we've got more on the agenda.
I understand your problem as chair there, Mr. Chair. Just a few more things about the bill, and just a comment. I agree with everybody, with everybody said. Representative Huntley and the others are all correct. And now somebody here is going to have to handle this problem. So we'll leave it at that for now. Just a couple more things in the bill. I want to commend Chair Huntley for finding the money to deal with the nursing facility interactions with a potential minimum wage increase bill.
if it came.
The bill spends $7 million, $8 million over the 3 years to handle that. It's good to recognize that direct impact. However, it does not address the long-term care industry and all the home care individuals about that interaction. And some people think that could be up to 1.5% of the 5%. So this part has not gone away. Unfortunately, there's so many people affected, it costs more money to deal with that. There could be $15 million or more dollars for that. But, Mr. Chair, you just one other section of the spreadsheet I'd like you to point out to you. On page 4, lines 242 to 253, those are the three parts that the governor included for the salary supplements. There's two supplements and then the expert review. And I don't have copies yet, but I will submit to you, to the committee, the letter from DHS expressing their concerns about that element. And I don't know if they would, but and the numbers of the layoffs that would happen if the House bill would go forward, leaving those out. There'd be 118 FTEs in mental health services and 85 FTEs in forensics and 15 FTEs at MSOP would be eliminated, which is over 200, which I don't think is the intent of your leadership or you. They also would have to close all community behavioral health hospitals, the child adolescent behavioral health services, and all intensive residential treatment services facilities, and cut off vocational services for clients. And if they didn't do that, they would go after an Anoka Treatment Center or some other employees in that pool somehow or other. And I don't know the interactions and all that, but I'm just giving you the letter. And I'm trying to help you deal with this all straight up in a committee that it should be dealt with. And so maybe you have to find some more money on the bottom line if you truly intend to go home with a 5%. But I'm just telling members who are cheering for the 5% that this $14 million piece, if it goes forward as the House is designed, and I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, it would cause harm that you didn't intend. And one thing else, Mr. Chair, and then I will be done. I would just like to remind the members in this room, there's actually a bigger group than before. This is Chair Huntley's last omnibus, and he has been an awesome, awesome chair. He has been nothing but fair and equitable and knowledgeable, and when he goes, there'll be a hole that will not be filled. In his knowledge base and his niche of expertise. And so I'm happy to have been able to work with the man and got to be his friend over these 16 years in the committee, Mr. Chair. And so the replacement who comes will be perhaps as good as freshman Huntley was, but will not be taking the place of the seasoned statesman that we have. And I just, if it's appropriate, I'd like just to recognize him for that. Could we applaud? Would that be appropriate?
That would be very appropriate.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Huntley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Abler. You know, he and I actually get along very well. We don't agree on everything, but we certainly appreciate each other.
And how many years were you on
this? And 22 years.
22.
You're interested.
On that point, okay. Representative Mulry.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted everybody to understand how hard it was for me to clap for Huntley because he's from Cretan.
That goes back to the St. Thomas.
The St. Thomas Creighton War here.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real briefly, I'm no expert in this area, but I have a recollection of the sick tax that the sick tax would go down dependent on the balance in the health care access fund. And now that we see all of this taking money out of the health care access fund, I'm absent that. I'm curious whether Mr. Marks or Mr. Berg would tell us what the ramifications are to the sick tax as a result of taking these funds.
The provider tax, I think, is what it's more officially known as. Mr. Huntley, or
well, it was in law. It says that if there's a large surplus, then we would reduce the tax rate. But right now, we don't have any surplus.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, to get at what I think you're asking about is that the prior to the deficit occurring in it at the end of last session when the healthcare access fund was projected to be solvent through the planning horizon, there still was not a high enough balance to ever trigger the rate ratcheting mechanism. The way things stand, the rate, the provider tax goes away on December 31st of 2019, calendar 19. And that provision says if there is a balance sufficiency of 125% of uses, that the rate is ratcheted down along the way. There was not projected to be 125% of uses at any point at the end of session last year, and there's still, of course, now with the deficits isn't. So the rate, the tax still goes away, and it still goes away on the schedule that it would have prior to this.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that absent taking the money from the healthcare access fund for other purposes, I believe it was medical assistance, absent that bailout, in fact, the sick tax would have been reduced to 1.5% as opposed to 2.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, if the actions of the last legislative session had not occurred, there would have been a balance. But as of the end of the last legislative session, there was not a sufficient balance.
Mr. Chair, just for clarification, you're talking about actions in 2013, not the last legislative session.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, that's correct.
All right, thank you.
Okay, we're trying to wrap it up, but Representative Davids has a short one, he tells me.
Very short. Mr. Chairman, several years ago when Speaker Zellers and Majority Leader Dean asked me to chair the Tax Committee, I was interviewed by quite a few folks from the press, and they said that, you have the toughest job, a $6.2 billion shortfall. Yes. As tax chair, you have the toughest job, and my response was very quick and very succinct. And I said, no, the toughest job in the legislature would be Doc Abler's job. He has Health and Human Services. So I agree with everything that Doc Abler said about Dr. Huntley, but it was brought to my attention from another member of this committee that I think this is the last omnibus bill also for Doc Abler. If it be appropriate, I think we should recognize him for his work over the years, working with Dr. Huntley and back and forth. I think he should be recognized. He's been a champion of this area, and I think he deserves some applause here also, Mr. Chairman, if it's appropriate.
I think that's fine. Both of the leaders in Health and Human Services going on to other things. So, Representative Huntley, do you?
I would like to move that the content of House File 2150, First Engrossment, as amended, into House File 3172 as separate articles on Health and Human Services.
Okay, any further discussion?
Yes.
Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Thank you. Motion carried.
Get that one cranked out.
Next will be Representative Wagenius.
Well, let's equal the HHS lobby.
Yeah, now the room clears up.
I thought they're all here for the race commission. Why are they all here? You didn't get the memo that we passed the people on?
Now I know where the world is.
You've got to give the good points for points. He did it very well. South High, Minneapolis, South High. Go Tigers!
We'll just wait a quick second while the room clears. Okay, Representative Wagenius, I think we can begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is the Environment, Natural Resources, and Agriculture Supplementary Finance Bill. We had a target of $16 million above the base, and we come in on target. There are four amendments, but I would like to first
Representative Wagenius, we need to first have you move the bill.
That's what I, thank you. I would like to move House File 3158, the first engrossment inclusion in House File 3172.
Okay, and you want to take the amendments first before you explain the bill?
Thank you. I would appreciate that because these are just amendments refining some of the numbers as they came in. And the First Amendment is A28, and I would like to move 3158A28.
Okay, the amendment is before us, and if you could explain the amendment.
This is a bit of additional money, $22,000, for the Mississippi Headwaters Board, and it is requiring some detailing of the results they achieved. You know, we have had some real successes with boards, and we have had some not-so-good successes. So this is just to make sure that the money is well spent.
Any discussion on the amendment? The cost was, what, $22,000, if I recall.
Yes.
All those in favor, then, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Wagenius, the A29?
Yes. I would move the A29 amendment. And I would have an amendment to the amendment to clarify it, and that would be on line 1.6. After determines that, we would add the words any of, and after use, add the, an S. So it, unless the commissioner determines that any of the proposed uses adversely affects. And then on line 1.7, I'll put a period after water and eliminate the rest of the language. And with that, I would, this is just to clarify some language we had already put in the bill that's actually allowing the commissioner to waive some fees, but as originally drawn, it was too broad.
Okay, and then you've got the oral amendment. Goldie.
Mr. Chair and members.
Solomon, I should say.
The oral amendment to page A29 starts on line 1.6. After that, insert any of, delete use and insert uses, and delete effects and insert effect. On page line 1.7, delete everything after groundwater and insert a period.
Thank you.
Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Aye. Motion carried. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an amendment A30 that I would like to move. And I would also like to amend the amendment to delete the on line 1.3. Delete the words before examine.
Okay. Any discussion on that amendment? That's you, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, in place of the deleted language, I would recommend inserting the words the commissioner. So the amended amendment on line 1.3 would read the commissioner shall examine how other states. So the in place of 1,000 in 2015 is to insert the words the commissioner shall.
Okay, and you're incorporating that?
I would love, that's much better language, thank you.
Okay, so that's incorporated into
yes.
The amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Okay, seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. Representative Wagenius?
Thank you, and I would move amendment A31. And in this case, what we are doing is giving an additional $13,000 for the Toxic Free Kids Act, and this goes to the Department of Health for their work.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, where does the underlying $335,000 go? I think we were going to have a fiscal note today in committee, and I don't know if my packet missed it or if nobody has the fiscal note.
We have House research. I mean, our fiscal analyst has obviously seen this and this research note, and it has come in, or the fiscal note has come in, and in that it was determined that what we had for PCA was the exact right amount, but what we did not have and had not included and didn't know to include money for the Department of Health. So this extra bit of money is for the Department of Health to do their work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, unfortunately, we moved this bill out of your committee, Environment Finance, without a fiscal note there, and the understanding was it would have a fiscal note here today in Ways and Means. I think you're telling me you don't have the fiscal note that was supposed to be here today.
Mm-hmm.
Fiscal staff has the fiscal note, but for some reason there were not copies made.
Mr. Chair, there's a preliminary fiscal note. It hasn't had all the signatures it needs for the final.
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Mr. Chair, we have a preliminary fiscal note. It doesn't have all the signatures on it yet. I guess that it needs to be a final fiscal note. But I have seen the numbers, and I talked to the Department of Health that this was the cost they would need in fiscal 15 to cover what the bill says in fiscal 15.
So you have the note, but not everyone's signatures. Whose signatures do you have? Anyone?
I'm not sure where the holdup is, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
There's three different agencies on the fiscal note, the PCA, the Department of Commerce, and the Department of Health, and I'm not sure who we're waiting to sign off on what yet.
But you do have the preliminary fiscal note, just a matter of the signatures, Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was uncomfortable moving the bill when we moved it out of Environment Finance, and as you know, Representative Wagenius, this bill originally didn't have any financing in it, so there wasn't a fiscal note. And I would think what we should be doing here then is eliminating the fiscal cost if we don't have a fiscal note, and you can put it back on the floor. But we're actually going to move the bill. We don't know what the actual costs are to the different agencies. This is no different than what we were told on Friday, and it was our understanding, or Thursday when we were there, that this would be forthcoming. I don't know that it's correct to be moving this bill. We should remove this money out of it then. Because the original bill didn't have the money in it.
Why don't we make copies of that preliminary note and have those distributed?
Mr. Chair, a follow-up?
Representative McNamara, I had to sign something.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious. When you say we have a preliminary fiscal note, but it's not signed off by the agencies, so is it actually the real fiscal note, or is it not? I mean, what are the FTEs, and which agencies are getting the money? We've not had any of that discussion yet, and I would have rather had it in the Environment Committee, but now it sounds like we're still not going to have it. Maybe now we're going to have it on the floor.
Representative Wagenius.
I do have the FTEs. This money is from the general fund. The FTEs would be 2.95. And the number we had for PCA is the number we have been carrying for a while. It was the number we had at our hearing, and it has not changed since then. The addition here is the number for the Department of Health.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm going to wait at this point, but Representative Wagenius, this is not how things normally happen. We're actually moving this blindly. You're talking about maybe there's an FTE. You said MPCA. Is there? I thought our fiscal analyst actually mentioned three agencies. What is the third agency, and what is that cost? It doesn't look like we're ready to really discuss this amendment at this point. And I think a more appropriate amendment would be to delete this financing at this time until you're ready to show us where the money's going. And we should actually have the agencies involved signing off. This is, I can't remember doing something like this.
Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative McNamara, the preliminary fiscal note, I believe it's my understanding it's in, there's quite a process of who all has to sign off on it. I believe the agencies have signed off. Is that MMB right now? I believe we're waiting for their signatures on a few things. I believe MMB has signed off on PCA's portion of this, which is $335,000. The Department of Health has $13,000 costs that this amendment addresses. And the Department of Commerce is the other one on the fiscal note, and they don't have any cost in fiscal year 15.
So just so we're clear, then, the departments have signed off. MMB hasn't signed off is where the hang-up is. And when did they sign off, do you know? When did the departments?
Mr. Chair, I'm not entirely sure. The fiscal note was, we're trying to get it by Friday, and I saw some of the preliminary numbers Friday, so I'm assuming it was Friday at some point, but I'm not sure.
Representative McNamara. Okay, any further discussion on the amendment, A31?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Holbert.
It is a little unusual not to have a final fiscal note as it gets sent out of Ways and Means, so I'm curious. My understanding is that you're trying to load up the base bill today and move it out, so I just am wondering your reaction to not having a final fiscal note and a true cost.
We're going to distribute the preliminary one, and as I understand it, then all of the agencies have signed off it. You know, for people that don't know the process, and the two of us probably know it well, and maybe everybody else, but, you know, MMB is kind of the one that oversees it, but they're actually prepared by the agencies, and then they submit them back to MMB after the request is made. And I don't know what's holding it up, but I have a feeling that we'll have that signature before the day is out. Mm. One of 18. Is anybody here from MMB? My basic question is, when you knew the bill was up today, why isn't it signed off on?
Mr. Chair.
The agencies have prepared their part of it.
Mr. Chair, committee members, given that there were a number of agencies, Michelle Mitchell with Minnesota Management and Budget, since there were a number of agencies on the bill, there are three different EBOs, our budget officers, that also had to review it. Given the due to the lateness on Friday, and there were outstanding questions over the weekend that we were waiting for some of the agencies to sign off on, then it's now up to me. I'm the one that has to do the final signature, and that is why it's not in final status at this point. But all of the numbers have been agreed to. It's I'm the holdup because
they're all agreed
to.
Can you sign it now?
I can, yes. As soon as I get back to my desk, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so you'll have it signed before we report the bill out. You're going to do that immediately.
I will do that immediately.
I think that solves our dilemma then. I did indicate I thought it would be done before the end of the day, and apparently it'll be done before the end of the committee meeting, so I think we're all set then. Holbert, does that
thank
satisfy?
You,
okay,
thank
very
you,
good.
It.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Members, I'm just going to go over the bill now, if you'd like.
Yeah,
and we have a very nice note from Mr. Hagemeyer. If you want to look at that, I will start with the end and say that we had a target of $16 million. We've met the target dead on. And there is some additional spending from some transfers of money, and I will explain those as we go along. First, to the Department of Agriculture, there is $1.5 million for farm-to-food shelf. We had a hearing in this committee on that bill. I don't think we need to say any more about it other than it seems to have extraordinarily strong support. Again, to the Department of Agriculture,
There are dollars for experts to evaluate hives of honeybees that are in distress to see why they are dying. There is a provision in this bill to compensate honeybee owners, and that would be coming from the agricultural pesticide account. We have money for the dog and cat breeder bill. This came through Representative Poppy's committee. There were no changes in the language and no changes in the dollar amount. That was a bill that was 7 years in the making, and we did not change it at all. The Toxic Free Kids Act, which we have just talked about, has an appropriation in fiscal year 2015 for $335,000 to PCA, now $13,000 to the Department of Health. There is a small study on plastic microbeads. They are getting into our waters, and we are looking for recommendations. We're looking for literature and that is out there so we can get recommendations for PCA next year what to do about that. We have a nice increase in SCORE grants. SCORE, if you'll remember, is the money that goes to communities to help with recycling. And the way that is divided is it's the money that is going to counties that are not in the metro area will be spending the money just as they've always spent the money, but counties in the metro area, and Representative Hornstein is here and he can talk more about this if there are questions, but counties in the metro area will be spending their new money split between composting and increasing their recycling rates. We have money for a Lake Emily Dam study of $50,000. We are having money really for maintenance in our state parks. I think we know about money for bonding for big things like putting on a roof, but if a tree branch falls and you have to replace six shingles or a toilet cracks and you have to replace that. These are not things that we do in the bonding bill. There's a huge backlog of deferred maintenance in our state park system, and that's where this money will go. And some of it from the general fund, some of it from Parks and Trails, Lottery and Lou. There is a narrow-leafed and hybrid cattail report. Basically, those two cattails are invasives, and they're taking over our native cattails, and we have to have some consistent way of dealing with that. That comes from the Game and Fish Fund. Quail used to be in southern Minnesota. Their native population, they have disappeared, and this is the next line is for a quail recovery plan, and that is a general fund appropriation. Representative Hansen has a state parks and license fee. Essentially, you know, we get a sticker when we want to go into the state parks. We can get an annual sticker. This would be an annual license plate. It would be kind of the same thing. Obviously, people could choose to buy it if they wanted to. The Met Council gets money from Lottery and Lou. There was a fair amount of money on the bottom line, and we're putting some of it to use to match what's going to Parks and Trails. We're creating a University of Minnesota Invasives and Pest Species Center, somewhat like the Aquatic Center that was done several years ago. In reality, there are more pests, more weeds, and more invasives on our terrestrials, actually, than in our aquatic system. So with that, I will note that for the Minnesota Invasive Species Center, some of it is general fund money. Some of it is money that LCCMR didn't spend in this budget and would go back into the trust fund if it wasn't spent. And some of it, an additional $900,000-ish, is from return of money from Bowser back to LCCMR, again, would have gone back into the trust fund if we were not going to use it, I think, appropriately for the University of Minnesota invasive species. So there's some money from, on the second page you'll see, from the Game and Fish Fund for sports facilities, shooting range grants, and with that, I think, members, I would take questions.
Okay, are there questions on the bill? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Wagenius, if you could, it looks like on page 6, the University of Minnesota is getting $5.589 million for the Terrestrial Center, but actually it's more than that. Correct. It's an additional $970,000, so the total's a little over $6.5 million.
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, that $970,000 was an LCCMR recommended appropriation that the legislature did for RIM financing, Reinvest in Minnesota, for permanent easements on land. My understanding is that money may not get spent. How long does the current proposal have to spend that money, and why isn't that money just being used for another long list of backlog projects for RIM?
Representative Guineas.
If I could, Bowser chose to return the money to LCCMR. I was not consulted about that. That is a choice they made. And so if we wanted to delve into that, I think we would more appropriately do it in our committee, and we could come up ask them why they chose to do it. But that was their choice, and they formalized that choice. So that is essentially why. Now, if we did not spend that money this year, it would go back into the trust fund. Now, the other question I think you were alluding to is that this money, and it is appropriated to the U, that and will last for 10 years. And one of the reasons, it's a small amount of money for a long period of time, but one of, you'll look at the language, and the language says the money is to be for a director of the center, we're not hiring new professors, and for graduate students and supplies. And one of the things that we have learned a lot about is that you cannot get a graduate student for 1 year. If you're going to get a PhD student, they need a commitment that there will be funding for 6-7 years for them to get their PhD, but also for them to concentrate on one issue. And when you're dealing with terrestrial invasive species or any invasive species, it takes a long time to figure out what the vulnerability of that plant or pest is and to look for a remedy. And I'll give you an example. On our farm, we have something called leafy spurge. It's all over North Dakota. It's a terrible invasive. It's a noxious weed. And some LCCMR money years ago went to the University of Minnesota to Dr. Wise. I didn't know this till recently. And they found a beetle. Took them years, but they found a beetle that went into the stem, went into the root in the winter, and essentially is the curb on this really noxious weed that is not native to Minnesota. I think it's native to someplace in China. But the beetle had to be found someplace where the weed also came from, where the weed seeds came from. So that is the protocol that we are setting up here. I know the U is excited about this money because we are getting more and more requests to deal with invasive species, particularly as climate change comes upon us.
Rep. McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Wagenius, I appreciate that, but in full disclosure, this, whether it be the $5,099,000, which is the appropriation from the general fund, or the additional $1.5 million from LCCMR, this appropriation has 11 years to be spent. Taking that money from LCCMR without LCCMR getting to weigh in on it, why wouldn't you at the very least be appropriating that money to those projects that just didn't quite make the cutoff? You've got 10 more years, it's 11 year to spend this money. Why wouldn't you use future monies for the U of M and appropriately put that LCCMR money back where the RIM money should go to RIM, if you ask me? That's what it was originally allocated for, and I understand, I think it was some ownership issues on this one particular project, but we have a huge backlog of RIM, and it would seem to make sense that's where that should go, because none of this went through LCCMR or the process, and it seems like that would make a more appropriate use of that money. I guess I would like your reaction to that. Why is this whole 6.5 necessary now instead of the $5,099,000 from the general fund?
Representative McGinnis.
I will try this again, Representative McNamara. After LCCMR met, one of the projects recommended by LCCMR, the proposers of that project decided to withdraw. That project, and there was a little bit on the bottom line. Together, that was $490,000. LCCMR had finished its process. Its process was unanimous. Everybody voted for the plan. So, if given that, we had $490,000 on the bottom line that if we did not use this year would go back into the trust fund. It would not go back to LCCMR to be spent. It would go into the underlying trust fund. Similarly, the money that Bowser chose to turn back for whatever reason would not be spent, would, if not spent this year, would go back into the trust fund. It would not be eligible for LCCMR to spend next year.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I get that, but why would you not pick one of the other projects that almost got in but didn't quite make the cutoff instead of funding a project that's 6, 8, 9, 10 years out in its funding? Wouldn't it make more sense to on the projects that just didn't quite make the cutoff, or appropriate the money back to RIM where it was originally for, which would keep with the intent of what the legislature and LCCMR recommended? This is just an ownership issue on a single particular RIM easement. We have hundreds of ongoing RIM easements out there. You could put the money back in RIM and it would stay where it was originally intended by the legislature and the recommendation from the LCCMR.
We'll try this again. Mouser turned the money back. I had nothing to do with it. They didn't ask me about it. They just turned the money back. Since they turned the money back, it would go, if we did not spend it now, it would go into the trust fund, not to LCCMR for spending if we didn't spend it now. LCCMR finished meeting. They came up with a plan where there was a unanimous vote for their plan. Unanimous. So to say we should go back and redo something that actually LCCMR rejected and didn't put in their recommendations, I don't think would be appropriate. There were a lot of things kind of left over that didn't get into the LCCMR package, and for us to choose one, I don't think would be appropriate.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but Representative Wagenius, when you say it was rejected, there's projects that had 7 positive votes. This project had 0 positive votes. This project was never before LCCMR. So the majority of the LCCMR members actually supported additional projects, and many of them supported RIM. I understand that Bowser and LCCMR staff can't reappropriate the money, but you could have done it in this bill. And in full transparency, you're not doing that. You're instead giving it to the money to the university to do the terrestrial center, which I very much support, which $5 million would be plenty adequate to start it when you're financing it, you're funding it out over 11 years. So, I mean, you could have put it, the money, into the ones that had a majority of the members supported, especially the RIM, and there's that water appropriation project in Benton County that's a very hot issue for us right now that I believe was one of those projects that had 7 positive votes and fits well within this money that's available. You could do fully fund the 970 for RIM and fund that water appropriation, and I believe have over $100,000 left that you could put in the university if you wanted to.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The process that you are talking about is the LOHC process. That's the heritage dollars. They have this ranking system, and it's not the same in LCCMR. LCCMR comes to consensus on projects. The whole thing was done by consensus, and everything that went into the package went in by consensus. And by consensus, some things were left on the table, and the project you're talking about, by consensus, was left on the table. So I don't think that it is correct to use the LOHC process and impose it on LCCMR when that's not the process they use.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, Representative Wagenius. I didn't say anything about the process. I said it got 7 positive votes. I think that's a fact, that it got 7 positive votes, correct?
Representative Wagenius.
It may have gotten that many votes, but that's always been a preliminary before the discussions are had in about a project. So it's different from LOHC, where there's an initial screening where folks say, well, we would like to screen these projects. And initially in a screening, it got what you call 7 positive votes. It was screened, and everybody who comes up for a screening gets actually a half an hour to present. And then there is a discussion. And in the discussion that went on later, everything that went into LCCMR was done by consensus.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, in regards to the fiscal note, I naturally haven't been able to digest the entire 18 pages yet, as it was just passed out. The paper's still warm. But I noticed it doesn't match your spreadsheet that was passed out at the beginning of the committee. On page 1 of your spreadsheet, I'm just wondering, the Toxic Free Kids Act, you show no tail costs. Is the page 1 of the preliminary fiscal note the actual tails cost?
That's correct.
Representative Wagenius.
That's correct.
Mr. Helpmeyer.
One of the things, members, about the Toxic Free Kids Act, that there will be dollars coming in. There is a $1,000 fee on every priority chemical that needs to be reported. And so there will be fees coming into this program to pay for it as it goes along.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, so actually this spreadsheet, I was thinking you were going to give us the numbers, but I'll just do the numbers and you can confirm they're correct. Where it shows no cost in fiscal year 2016, it should show $744,000 cost. And in fiscal year 2017, it should show a savings of $125,000.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hagemeyer had his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, just to be clear on that one, there are fees coming in the tails, and there's anticipated expenditures in the tails. However, the bill, as it's written, is giving one-time money in fiscal 15 to get the project started. So there isn't the appropriation in 16-17 of the fees or of a different funding source or whatever is chosen for that. That's why it's not included in the spreadsheet, because it isn't being appropriated at this time.
Representative McNamara.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hagemeyer, so this money's not going to come in, or are you telling me you don't know how much the appropriate cost of a number of FTEs associated with those dollars actually are? I'm a little confused.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, the spreadsheet shows what's being appropriated in the bill. So there is an appropriation of $335,000 that was just amended today to $348,000 in fiscal year 15. That covers the fiscal year 15 cost. There are revenues coming in. That's in the language to collect those fees. And right now that's anticipated at $620,000 in fiscal year 17. There are anticipated expenditures in fiscal years 16 and 17. There isn't an appropriation of those fees or any other mechanism in 16-17 at this point to provide for those costs, so that's why they aren't included in the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, then, have the department checked off that the anticipated revenues in the out biennium will negate the cost? It's a zero, is that what you're saying? Either Chair Wagenius or Mr. Hagemeyer.
It appears that not only will pay off its costs, there will be. Okay. There is an anticipated savings in this, and the question I know has been raised on the 744, and it. I would anticipate that one of the ways that we could deal with that is use the money from the environmental fund as essentially a loan until the dollars come in. But I do think that is something that is not for this year. It will be for next year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one other one, Representative Wagenius, what are we doing with the school trust director in this bill? Is the project that legislation required us to fund a school trust director, and the governor never included that in his recommended budget, and the legislature never included it last year, but don't I see some language in here that you are now going to fund the school trust director, this position at MMB, you're going to fund that out of forestry and minerals account?
Representative Wagenius.
If I could, this bill was brought to us by Representative Benson, along with Representative O'Driscoll. There seemed to be a strong bipartisan support for it. It went into this bill just as they proposed. I'm pretty sure. I actually need to check on that, but I'm quite sure the language just went in as they proposed it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, then the follow-up to that, you were saying you're mostly sure. I don't know if DNR is here or not. There's nothing in this bill that moves this position that was agreed to by the legislature and the governor to fund it in MMB. There's nothing in here that funds moves this position to DNR.
I think what you are asking is that in the original legislation that passed, there was to be a position in the Department of Administration, not MMB, and that members here voted for that money in our last legislative session. And that was the House position. The Senate did not take the House position, and that was not funded. Is that an answer to your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, but you're not moving the position from MMB, Department of Admin, to DNR in this bill? I've had it brought to my attention that there's an effort to move this position to DNR, and I just want to confirm it's not in this bill in its form to change the position to
DNR.
No,
if that's the question, the answer is no.
Thank you. I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wagenius, I looked at the House research summary, and I'd like to either ask you or Representative Poppy, Chairman of the Ag Policy Committee, is there anything in this bill about agriculture at all?
Oh.
Positively for agriculture.
This is a terrific bill for agriculture, and on three counts.
Would you show me which part in here?
Sure. If you look on the spreadsheet, you'll see part of it. The farm to food shelf money is $1.5 million this year, and that will be carried in the tails, and that's a bill that was heard in Representative Poppy's committee. All the pollinator work will be done in agriculture. There is language about industrial hemp that will be done in agriculture. But let me point out, I think as significant as those are, the most significant thing is the terrestrial invasive species center. The way that was originally started was from Representative Falk, and it was talking about our natural resources and invasive species moving into our natural resources like prairies and forests and wetlands. And then we had a hearing where we were hearing about essentially what I guess is best to call agriculture weeds and how some of them are becoming resistant to chemicals. And so as we had that discussion, Representative Falk's bill was broadened substantially to include agriculture weeds, pests, and there's another word and I'm going to lose it, other things that are bad for agriculture. Somebody's going to help me with that word in a minute, but that institute brings together, and you can look at the bill it's near the end of the bill. On page 44, and you will look at how this is going to work. There will be a director, and then working with the following departments, and you'll see one of them is agronomy and plant genetics, one is plant pathology, one is plant biology. So these are departments that are working on agriculture pests as we speak. So I would say in this bill, this invasive species center is extremely important for agriculture.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I consider agriculture, it's the kind of things that we ship overseas. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, export we have out of Minnesota are agricultural products. They aren't listed here. Is there anything we've done in this bill to further benefit agriculture in what looks to be a kind of a tough year for them this year? All the input costs are still up. The price for the commodities are down. Many of them will project to lose money right now. And is there anything here that will help them with regular agriculture that, as we know it now, corn, soybeans, barley, wheat, hogs, cattle, sheep. What do you got in here to help those normal products that we use as a commodity in Minnesota? Is there anything here that will help that farmer who's looking at a very tough year?
Well, if you're looking particularly for subsidies, no, there's nothing in here for subsidies. But one of a farmer's biggest input costs is dealing with, and I found it, it's on line 44.23, terrestrial invasive plants, other weeds, pathogens, and pests. So we're trying to cover the base of the things that farmers have to put huge inputs on to deal with, and finding some alternatives so they don't have to put in those huge inputs. So I think over the long term, this is extremely helpful for our agriculture community.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the ag chemical industry is also looking very much at those same things. And I think I will put my confidence in them instead of the government. I think the thing that we do very well in your committee is to cause one mandate after another on farmers trying to make a living farming in Minnesota. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Holder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm still a little concerned about the fiscal note and the costs, and in particular in the tails, in that you... In 16, I don't see where the $744,000 is paid for in the bill. We've heard that you're going to start taking in money in fiscal year 17, and you show a net gain of $125,000, but that still leaves, at least in my mind, and the way I do math, a pretty good chunk of change not appropriated. Are the agencies just going to eat that more than $500,000 in costs? Or
that is, I think you heard from our fiscal analyst, and I can't add to that in more than to say that since the expectation is that there will be more money coming in 17 and after to pay for this bill, that it may be appropriate next year to say that we will borrow money from the environmental fund in order to cover that cost for the 1 year. Only as a loan.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, while our fiscal staff is quite helpful in providing us with the numbers, we as policymakers are supposed to put forward legislation that balances and that pays for the spending in the bill. And if you're going to borrow from the environmental fund, then that should probably be reflected in the bill in front of us. Because if this passes and there's no appropriation to cover this more than $500,000 of cost in the tails, when they do the forecasting, they're going to show it as spending, but it appears that there's no revenue to pay for it. Mr. Chair, I don't know if you want to weigh in, but it's a little unusual. It's not de minimis.
Well, I'm listening to what the fiscal staff said.
Well, Mr. Chair, their fiscal staff said the revenue doesn't come in until fiscal year 17, where you have a net savings of 125, but in 16 you have a cost of 744. That's not dealt with in the language of the bill, as far as I can tell.
Representative Wagenius, do you have any? You talked about the loan.
It would be appropriate.
That's what the bridge is, as I understand it,
we
what
could,
the fiscal analyst said.
We could work on an amendment to do that, if that would be something that the chair would like to do.
Yeah, that would have to come later, because we need to report the bill out today. Maybe conference committee?
We could do that.
Well,
Mr. Chair.
Or floor, but conference committee may be the easiest at this point, you can see.
And if I might, I'm sorry to even bring this up, but once again, we have data provisions in a bill that never went to civil law. If you look on page 32, section 40, that begins on line 9, under A, the agency shall publish all data that is required to be filed under sections, blah, 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 and that is not trade secrets. The way I read that, you throw out all of the classifications of data in Chapter 13 and say, if it's not a trade secret, you will publish it, rather than respecting data classifications for a whole variety of items under Chapter 13. So this definitely needs an additional work and is another example of this bill taking a rather unconventional route to end up here today in front of us, these issues not being dealt with. I just raise it as a point of concern.
I could respond to this, Mr. Chair. This bill did go to civil law. The Winkler bill that was included here, which is the Toxic Free Kids Act, did go to civil law.
No, Mr. Chair, I apologize for that. I obviously wasn't in the room when it went through.
Okay, any further discussion? I have asked Mr. Marks to see if they could quickly deal with that bridge question.
That would be good.
If they can do it quickly enough, otherwise we may have to do it on the floor. Did I see, was there somebody over here to my left? Okay, if not, would you like to renew your motion? And then if some language does appear, we can revert back, but I do want to get that housing article done as well. Representative Wagenius?
Yes, I would renew my motion that the contents of House File 3158 for some engrossment as amended be moved into 3172 as a separate article on environment, natural resources, and agriculture.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Yeah, thank you. And we may be sure you're here in case Mr. Marcus comes up with something. We'll reconsider the vote and insert the language if it's available. And okay, we have Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative
Davis. While we're just changing gears, I just Representative Davis made a nice statement for me. My decision hasn't been finalized yet, so I didn't know how to get out of that while they were clapping. So just so you don't know, I'm not dead yet, Mr. Chair. So thank you.
Well, you know, while we were at it, I was tempted to recognize the ranking minority member on this committee with the title commissioner, but then I thought that would be a little premature. So there are going to be some changes, obviously, some more than others, perhaps. But understand your point, Representative. Let's see. We have the housing bill before us, and Representative Clark, would you like to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would. We've been working on some of this over the weekend, and the first motion, though, is to bring House File 2246 back before the committee so it can move into the omnibus bill and be constitute a separate housing article. So I would like to move to insert the content of House File 2246 into House File 3172.
Okay, the motion is before us, and you have an amendment?
Mr. Chair, I think...
another motion. Monday. Excuse me, I was getting ahead. This is the Monday one that we've already heard. We need to insert that. Yeah.
It's procedural.
Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Clark.
Yes. I'd like to move House File 2112, the first engrossment, be included in the House File 3172, and I do have amendment to that, an oral amendment.
The motion is before us, and then Representative Clark, if you'd like to move the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the oral amendment on page 3, beginning on line 25, through page 4, line 21, I would like to delete section 4. Members, what that does is it deletes the home part of the bill. We had a lot of discussion on this over the weekend and drafted some new language. And my understanding with the chairman is we'll take that out of our bill, and that will be travel separately. I want to thank the chairman and others for working with me on that over the weekend, make sure we meet the concerns not only of MHFA, but also of the MMB and others who were concerned about some bonding issues. So, Mr. Chairman, I move that deletion, deleting Section 4.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Is there any further discussion then on the amendment? I mean on the bill, yeah. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Mr. Marks, did you have something to put together to solve the problem that we were talking about on the bridge? It's a different kind of bridge.
Mr. Chair, members, we have something we think would do this.
Mr. Chairman, members.
Yeah, if
it would be on, and this is back on House File 3158. Page 4, after line 17, add language saying the base for this program from the Environmental Fund in fiscal 2016 is $744,000 and in fiscal 2017 is $495,000. And that's the best I can do now. I'll have to write this up. But
okay, that gets us, let's see, is Representative Guinea is here?
Right here.
Oh, there we are. Maybe we can view that as a temporary solution and see if that language needs to be refined as the bill moves forward. But at least as it leaves committee, we've got that, as I'm calling it, the bridge amendment. What I think we need to do then is move to reconsider your article in the bill so we can through that amendment. So
I would make that motion.
Okay, the motion is before us to reconsider the Environmental Natural Resource article. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Guinness, I don't know if you have the language in front of you, but should we just rely on Mr. Marks?
I totally rely on Mr. Marks.
Okay. Representative Guinness moves the language that will be shared with us again by Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, in House File 3158, on page 4, after line 17, insert, the base for this program from the Environmental Fund is $744,000 in fiscal year 2016. And $495,000 in fiscal year 2017.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, then, is some money going to go back to the general fund? Because I thought there was actually in 17 a positive cash flow. What's the effect of the $500,000 in 17? Wasn't the number a positive in 17?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative McNamara, it's positive in 2017. That's revenue to the Environmental Fund that it's showing up as. So that the money would go back, the fee revenue would come back into the Environmental Fund and offset a portion of these costs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Marks.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. So Representative Wagenius moves the Environmental Natural Resource article as amended be reinserted in the House File, 3172. Any further discussion? Seeing none, none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Aye. Motion carried. We were going to adjourn at approximately 1 o'clock. Shall we We do have some other bills that we could quickly take up if members, otherwise we have to be here longer when we come back. Okay. I think the consensus is I'd rather, we can keep going for a little while.
Michael, for a couple of bucks, I can have.
I'm reminded now we've got to do the final vote on 3172 and give staff the instructions to do the technical changes so the chair makes that that motion, then that we adopt 3172 as amended and include in that motion that the staff be given the instructions to do the
Mr. Chair.
Technical amendments that might be needed to put the omnibus bill together. Representative Abler.
Well, thanks, and I just wanted to offer a comment. I guess this is the best time just to the whole bill and the whole idea of having a bill with all these topics in it. I personally object to that. I think this is not the best way to serve these topics. The nuance on some of these on these matters is significant, the human service part in particular, but even this environment thing. And the best way to do this is have a conference committee of five from each body on both all the topics so they can be firmly vetted or thoroughly vetted on behalf of the public. And putting them together, there'll be five chairs. Hopefully there's a Republican as one of them if somebody wants to vote for it. So there'll be four Democrats and one Republican from each side, I hope. At least there's some balance to the discussion. But even so, you're going to be down to four chairs covering more topics than four. And so some topics will have very little representation. Having been a part of the Health Committee, Human Service Committee, for now 16 years, as we discussed, Mr. Chair, that process has worked well. I thought the 1812 project was not as well done as it might have been, even though you sat at the helm and you were very able at it. But the topic diversity is broad, and so I just wanted to offer my opinion to that. And I hope that in the future we don't do this anymore, and we let the topics, let K-12, let environment, et cetera, agriculture, have their day with their people, so all the farmers, all the teachers, all whoever can come, and not be a part of a mass. And also on the floor, there's very little chance to offer the thoroughness of the discussions that can be had. There's a finite amount of time to cover one big bill, and I just think it's not productive. So I would, the decision's been made beyond my pay grade, Mr. Chair, but I just like to know that I think it's a bad
decision. That decision on one bill is made House, Senate, in terms of how it will be approached. There will be a conference committee, but my intent is to, with the various articles, obviously, use the chairs to negotiate if they don't happen to be on the conference committee to be heavily involved with their particular article, which is what we've done in the past as well. That's the way we'll be moving forward with the bill. As far as the discussion on the House floor, what we did when I've twice done this kind of thing where I've carried, everybody references 1812, but there was another one after that. I don't remember the number of it, but we will have each of the fiscal chairs present and answer questions on the House floor relative to their article in the bill, and we'll be going through it article by article. So I will be deferring to them and asking the speaker to recognize them or yield to them to present their part of the bill. But understand what you were saying. And by the way,
thank you, Mr.
Being that just before we vote, you raised the question about the Health and Human Services and the potential need for other funding. The Health and Human Services bill was reported out on March the 27th. And the communication raising the questions that you had, the letter is dated March the 26th. I don't know if it was received then on the 27th or whether it was actually received on the 26th. And it was sent to Representatives Huntley and Governor Dayton and Senator Tony Laurie. When I said I wasn't aware of it, maybe the if they would have been watching the calendar, they would have probably communicated to this committee as well, being that this was where the bill was ultimately being referred to, literally either the same day or the next day that the letter arrived. The issue, as I understand it, first surfaced, but after we earlier, I'm talking about this communication, after the targets were set. So that's why when I said I wasn't generally aware of the issue, just to give you that bit of history there.
Mr. Chair.
I suspect this will probably be discussed further in conference committee.
Mr. Chair.
And
I wasn't intending to embarrass you. I just was calling.
No, I didn't do it.
I can't imagine the topics you have to keep track of. So.
Yeah, I just wasn't aware, and nobody drew it to my attention. That's until
I'm grateful for your candor. It was passed out at the meeting.
I asked for a copy of the letter, Representative Abler, because I was interested in what the date of the letter was.
Oh, sure.
It was the 26th, day before you folks reported it out of Health and Human Services. So, Representative Hulbert.
Well, thank you. And, Mr. Chair, I can't find my spreadsheet, but I believe this was in the governor's recs. So I don't think the issue of whether it's the 26th or 27th, I don't know.
In terms of this communication that Representative Abler had taken information from, that's why I added to that that the information we got came, the governor's bill came, and other communication apparently came after we had set our targets, was my point there.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair,
So there was kind of two steps. We set the targets. We didn't have the governor's bill or the information at that point in time. And then this communication, the most recent one, came the day before they reported it out. And the only point is that they hadn't engaged this committee.
And, Mr. Chair, were these items not in the supplemental budget?
I said they were in the supplemental budget, but that came about after we had set the targets for the committees. So there'll be further discussion, just so people understand the history of it. We had set the targets. Supplementary budget came forward after that. Or the governor's bill, as we sometimes refer to it. And then this communication that was here came about just before the committee reported it out. So we'll continue to work on that issue.
And, Mr. Chair, back to the process with everything being held in one bill, and I know one of the concerns is the public process. And as you are working through conference committee, is it your intent that if various articles are being discussed, that they'll be done so in a public setting with the chairs of those areas invited to the public conference committee discussion on those articles?
I would hope so.
All right, thank you.
Representative Loon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and actually that was the same question I was going to ask about the process and if some of those conversations are going to be happening while the public was invited to be part of those discussions, and I certainly hope that will be the case moving forward.
From my perspective, I hope that it can be as open as possible. Correct.
Mr. Chair, just a question for you. Obviously, the decision was made to move this all as one large omnibus bill, and I think Representative Abler mentioned some very valid concerns with that. I would echo that. Just wondering if that decision, if there's a plan to perhaps try to finish the session early, since it's March 31st, and if we go through May 19th, there would be time to do these bills individually. But obviously, the decision's been made not to proceed that way. So. Is that part of a plan to perhaps try to wrap the session a little earlier than sine die?
I, just by the way, checked. This is the same process that was used by the Republican caucus in the early 2000s. Not last time because there wasn't any, you didn't have a bill apparently, but when you were in charge under Speaker Sfigum, it was second year of the biennium. Apparently one bill. So this is the history of both caucuses, second year of the biennium when you have an appropriations bill of this type. But we're going to be as open as possible when we do it. But there will be an official conference committee of five, and then hopefully, and I have to work with this question with the Senate as well. I mean, this isn't something we do unilaterally, but my history has been to try to do it as openly as possible, and if we're able to do that, then obviously the public and other members can weigh in. Okay, any further discussion? Okay, seeing none then, we are, this is where I direct the staff. We are including in that motion to direct the staff to make any technical changes that may be necessary to reflect and will be the will of the committee when putting the bill together. I renew my motion and recommend that House File 3172, as amended, be placed on the general register. So that was the technical part for the fiscal staff and others to make any necessary corrections. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion
no.
Carried.
No.
Okay, and then let's try to get some of these other bills out of the way. And it's Representative Pawlowski is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 2701, the second engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. This is the disaster bill we dealt with and Representative Paymar's public safety bill. And when we're done with all of the amendments, we will have removed the fiscal part of the bill and the rest of it will pass on its own.
Okay, and you want to begin to move the amendments, Representative?
I move that the A1 amendment was a technical amendment we adopted last week. Be approved.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair and members, the next amendment is on page 9, and it is beginning on line 25 through line 30 to strike Article 3. This will remove the fiscal elements of the bill.
Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to renew my motion and recommend that House File 2701, second engrossment, as amended, be placed on the general register.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I move that House File 2658, second engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. This is the work comp bill. It's coming to this committee because it has a $31,000 state charge to start charge to the state to pay for coverage that was negotiated by the work comp advisory board for post-traumatic stress syndrome last year. And we are self-insured, and this is $31,000 pays for the state to buy reinsurance with the state reinsurers group, which spreads out the cost in case something happens catastrophic.
Okay. Any discussion on the bill or the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Murphy, we're getting her, I think.
But we didn't have any.
How is the cafeteria?
She should be down shortly.
I'm sure the pumpkin bill is here. Oh, Aaron.
Aaron.
What was I thinking? Aaron. Yeah.
She's on.
They didn't start.
I know. She was on her way. Yeah. We'll just visit for a minute. She's on her way. I think we went faster than what they anticipated mm-hmm. the last two. Here she is.
Yeah.
Hey, Representative Murphy, welcome to the committee. And we went faster with the last two bills than we anticipated. Otherwise, we would have given you a little earlier notice. I will move that House File 2180, Fourth Engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And I understand you have a technical amendment, and so I will move the A31 amendment. If you could explain the amendment, then Representative Murphy.
Certainly, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for having me to the committee. This amendment was drafted by Mr. Mark Shepard at his urging, and it is to clarify the language that charter school board members, employees, or officers cannot accept gifts as we are applying the gift ban to school superintendents, school board members, and a member of an exclusive union, if you will, if they have the authority to make decisions. And we wanted to make sure the language dealing with charter schools was clear. So we're just changing the language, applying the same policy, but changing the language to make sure it's clear. And I'd ask for your support.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Murphy on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is House File 2180, which is creating the mechanism for using competitive proposals or competitive bids to drive down the cost of health coverage for school employees, school districts, and property taxpayers. And I'm in Ways and Means today to talk about the cost. The cost for this bill is $294,000. As introduced, it was $1 million of an appropriation, but it has been reduced to comport with the fiscal note that's been created by MMB. Those costs are being carried in Representative Marquardt's bill, the Education Finance Bill, which I believe is in the supplemental budget bill. They're not in this bill anymore, but I wanted to make sure that the committee knew that we had gotten a fiscal note. We knew the cost for this proposal. It was being carried in that bill. And that is the reason why I'm here today.
Okay, and we did have a discussion about the money in the earlier this morning when Representative Marquardt was presenting his article in the bill we just passed a few moments ago. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Murphy, this program will be competing with private sector insurance plans, and so I'm curious if you're having a level playing field. There's no remuneration for cost of bidding for anybody else. What makes PEEP so special that they shouldn't have the same business model of everybody else competing for insurance business?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Holbert. School districts acquire coverage from different entities in different ways. So they are self-insured and acquire coverage through third-party administrators. They get their coverage through PEEP. They get their coverage through our health plans in a fully insured market. They get their coverage through co-ops with joint powers agreements. And in all of those cases, there is a mechanism for the fully insured market, the self-insureds, for the service co-ops to cover their costs in the way that they do their business. That is not true for PEEP. PEEP covers their costs by spreading the cost over those that are currently covered. And so when I talked with the folks at MMB and with PEEP, in order for them to actually do the additional work that we're asking them to do, there is a cost incurred, and that's why there's a fiscal note. But for instance, when a service co-op covers this book of work, getting RFPs, or administering contracts, there is a cost embedded in that work for the co-ops, and that's how they're able to cover their costs.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Holbert,
aren't the costs of providing this information by the privates built into the cost of the premiums that of the people that buy insurance from them?
From a much larger pool, yes. Mr. Chair, yes.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Holbert.
Representative Murphy, so I'm trying to read between the lines here, but you're saying PEEP is so special because it insures a very low number of people?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbert, I am not saying that they're special because they insure a lower number of people. I'm just saying that they are differently situated from the fully insured market, from our health plans, from the service co-ops, and they all participate in this and finance their work differently, and PEEP does it in a certain way. They are a public employee pool that is self-insured, just like CGIP, and so we're accounting for their costs. Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And
as I mentioned before in our committee, that prior to this committee, we discussed the schools that I represent are also self-assured, and you know, they're against this piece of legislation. And the legislation, many times it talks about kickbacks and bribes and so forth. Do you have any evidence that our school districts are corrupt, are receiving these types of kickbacks?
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, not once have I ever asserted that language or used that language. And the bill does not talk about that.
Okay.
Any further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, I think this was presumed in some remarks you made, but I'd like you to clarify further the ongoing costs that might be incurred by PEEP for the bidding process. My understanding, since you've made this a one-year appropriation, is that we would examine that in the future, not simply to see what cost changes might have occurred for PEEP, but what is a fair process that going forward, if PEEP's volume increases dramatically and those costs are distributed differently, to keep it a competitive market? Am I correct in that assumption?
Mr. Chair and Representative Reinert, thank you for making that clarification. The money that is in Representative Marquardt's bill is a one-time appropriation, and there will be follow-up study to understand what the cost could be going forward, or if we need to appropriate further funds, we may not.
Any further discussion? Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just real quick, what happened to the open meeting provisions in the bill?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbert, those were removed after our conversation and the hearing in civil law.
And Mr. Chair, so there'll be no sunshine whatsoever in this process then, as opposed to trying to find a way to delineate the different classifications of data.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, we did begin to explore how we might be able to add that sunshine, and we haven't been able to reach a conclusion about that. Representative Dabney has talked about summary data. It may be a way for us to look at that going forward, but at this point, I was not clear or confident that we could achieve the sunshine that we were looking for while protecting the privacy of an individual in a small school district. And so, therefore, we took it out at this point.
And, Mr. Chair, I'm thinking that as you left civil law, you were going to work on delineating the data sets. I'm guessing that there would be a fair number, if not a majority, of civil law committee members that would be concerned that you did away with the open meeting provision.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Holberg.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just want to remind members that service cooperatives are composed of elected officials, and when they meet as a group, they are under the open meeting law. So a lot of this information is considered in an open meeting process. And I know there were some subcommittee, there was some subcommittee work that was under analysis for whether it also should be under the open meeting law. But whenever the open meeting law applies to elected officials, in this case, any subcommittees that are primarily composed of elected officials are under that open meeting law.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reinhart, we were concerned about the PEEP organization, not school boards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holbert, I was speaking about service cooperatives, and that was the comparable legislation. When we're going to apply this comparable requirements to PEEP, they were already required of service cooperatives in this legislation, and that's, I think, but of the subcommittees related to insurance, I think that was the issue. Anyway, thank you.
I'm always interested in the open meeting law. I was the first on the House side to introduce it along with my state senator, but you know all the twists and turns that bills take. I ended up not being the author of the one that actually passed into law, but got it started through some of the committee process. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then I renew my motion that House File 2180 be recommended to pass as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carried. We got a couple of quick announcements.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Members, I would just ask you to check your email periodically. I'll do an update, but since the adjustments were made to the floor session tomorrow and Wednesday, Instead of meeting at 10 o'clock tomorrow, we'll probably meet 45 minutes after session, just so you have a chance to get over here and do some work. And then on Wednesday, we will likely go in like 15 minutes after session. So then it's my understanding that you folks need to, you have a caucus prior to session, right? Isn't that what you said?
Mr.
On Wednesday.
Chair, Ms. Conley, we would need time after Wednesday floor session to caucus as Ways and Means members, because I believe the agenda on Wednesday will be the second tax bill. Is that correct?
That's Tuesday.
Yes. That's Tuesday, yeah.
Tuesday is the second tax bill.
Tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, I guess that everything kind of got put upside down this morning, so if I might be able to check schedules and get back to you on that, I'd appreciate it.
Why don't we work with you on that so that you get a chance to meet, and we'll probably want to have an opportunity to do that as well. Everybody, as Ms. Conley said, be sure you watch your emails. This is a result of change with when floor session takes place, so we've had to adjust our committee schedule accordingly. With that,
Mr. Chair, if I might, I'm sorry. The minority is looking for the worksheet where they will include the TAILS and FTE numbers prior to the amendment deadline for the bill being on the House floor. So I think I'm guessing that that's going to be on the floor maybe Thursday with a maybe a Wednesday, but those are two pieces of information that would be important for the minority to have in addition to the engrossed version of the bill. So,
okay. And I don't know if all the committee chairs and their staff are here, but we'll do an email reminding them to get that information before Thursday. Well, before you want it on Wednesday, because you want to be able to.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think depending on what the deadline for amendments will be, it's important information prior to our having to submit amendments to the bill. So with the pre-filing
deadline that's in House rules, you're talking about when the bill is on the floor Thursday, right?
Well, Mr. Chair, we haven't seen a notice for the bill on Thursday. We're anticipating that's what it will be, but given that we have to have our amendments in 24 hours or whatever the rule is, I'm just putting on the record that information that is key for us to prepare our amendments would include FTE numbers and the TAILS being reflected in the spreadsheets.
Okay, Mr. Marks said they'll get it tomorrow.
All right, thank you.
But, it's tentatively planned for Thursday. It hasn't been officially announced, but that's the game plan that I'm preparing for.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, with that, meeting adjourned.